it's Jeff Blair, host of the new podcast, Writer's Block. If you're hearing this via your primetime sports feed, follow the link in the show description to subscribe to Writer's Block for more great sports talk and interviews from myself, Richard Deitch, and Stephen Brunt. Writer's Block, sharp takes, not hot takes. Thanks.
With every pizza Nova, you get real Italian pizza. You'll get a friendly ciao, because that's the way we'll be here.
So pick up the phone and call us, pick up the phone and call us now.
Oh, Pizza Nova, pick up the phone and get a ciao.
Job requirements included having triggered a tantrum by a pompous, angry, multi-million-dollar athlete, they'd be unbelievably overqualified for the job. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is Writer's Block for Thursday. Big Thursday. World Series is over. TFC off to the MLS Cup. Turn your microphone on. There you go. I got to do something. Keep talking, Deitch.
TFC to the MLS Cup. Raptors beat the Pistons yesterday. A nice comfortable win to head to 4-1. Bianca does pull out of the end-of-the-year championships in tennis, so that's sort of one negative checkbox in the sports column, although she had a fantastic year, so always still a positive Bianca. But yesterday was just an unbelievable, you let me know when you take over the show again. Yesterday was just an unbelievably great sports day. I was sitting, nice jersey. I was sitting.
Tell people about it.
You're wearing an Expos jersey.
Indeed.
Is that now, you have, for the radio audience, Jeff is wearing a Montreal Expos jersey with number 69 on it. Does the 69 represent the year or a player? I assume the year.
It's the first year of in the history of the franchise.
That's what I figured, right.
It was given to me by, when I left the Montreal Gazette, by P.G. Aloiello and John Silverman and the Expos. It's very really nice. I usually hang.
Had you told me you would have done
69
that.
69 is also a joke, by the way.
I would have given,
I would have given you a bigger
That's intro.
Okay. I figured someone's got it. You know what? Someone's got to represent.
At the Expos.
Someone's got to represent.
I hear you.
You know?
I saw, you know what, though? Actually, in watching last night's game and being online and reading stuff, there were people who referenced the Expos.
It was interesting.
Some old school types, like Tom Boswell types.
But I wrote a column that's going up in Sportsnet.ca, and what I said is I understand that the Expos aren't the Nationals and the Nationals aren't the Expos,
right,
and vice versa. I get that. But what is kind of interesting, and I've sort of made a note of this in social media during the World Series, this is what I talk about. I think what's happened in a lot of ways is it's almost like the Montreal diaspora. Has glommed onto this. I mean, a lot of people who were Montrealers who live elsewhere, who've left the city, they, I think, are kind of treating it as a little more of an Expos / Nationals thing than the people who live in Montreal, than the hardcore baseball fans in Montreal. I mean, there are some ties. Dave Martinez played for them. Their third base coach, Bob Henley, played and managed for him. And, of course, F.P. Santangelo, their broadcaster, is a much beloved member of the Expos and Ottawa Lynx as well when they were their AAA franchise. But I think that's kind of cool. I think the fact that people who lived in Montreal or from Montreal or Montrealers looking at it from a distance and kind of feeling happy about what it was like to be an Expos fan. I would argue that since the Expos left Montreal, this is the only thing that franchise has done that would carry any resonance with Montreal.
Well, so a couple things. One, it's 14 years since they moved, right? So there is distance and time, and I think that's a good thing in terms of like grabbing on to this championship. Second thing is, in speaking from previous experience, you have seen you have seen fan bases in a city when that franchise leaves continue to have an affinity for that franchise. I have no doubt that there were a lot of Dodger fans, Jeff, in the 50s and 60s, who still followed the Los Angeles Dodgers after they left Brooklyn and felt a great affinity for them. So I think that that is, to me, like, if you had an unlimited amount of money as a sports outlet, I think it would have been cool to have a reporter in Montreal to do sort of a scene piece last night.
I don't know if there was much of a scene.
You think you don't think people were at bars, at least in some place in the city, watching it and probably cheering for the Nationals?
No. Canadians were playing the Coyotes. I'm willing to bet that.
I didn't know that last night. All right. Well, I
99%
guess.
Of the people. Everything I'm hearing and everything I'm reading is you know, other than a few maybe personal ties that people have to the Expos, you know, through whoever's still on that team, I don't get the sense there's any resonance. I think people view this franchise as two distinct franchises. So the good thing is that I don't think there's this overwhelming sense of belonging in Montreal this morning.
Right.
And I also think, you know, people in Montreal are probably more positive today about getting a baseball team back
than they were
when the Expos left.
Right. So last night, you know, we talked about this week, Jeff. You know, baseball remains one of those sports when you sort of want to write it off, when you are bothered by the ills of the sport, it sort of draws you back in. And last night, again, I felt like it was one of those nights where even if you are really sort of filed under the word casual baseball fan, it just, that game and how the series played out brought you back in. And it was a fascinating game to watch with how great Greinke pitched, and Scherzer pitching almost equally as well for the Nationals. So you have two Cy Young guys going at it. And then just the Astros take the lead, and I thought they were about to run away with it. And then everything changes with the Rendon home run and Kendrick's home run. Osuna gets beat up a little bit. There's so many, like, fascinating little subplots. And I have to admit, and obviously being in the city, I love the fact that Daniel Hudson was on the mound to end it. I thought that was such a cool thing.
Yeah, although it's not like Daniel Hudson was a long-serving member of the Toronto Blue Jays.
I get it, but given that he sort of was raked, at least in some quarters, for being out of there for the birth of his kid, the fact that he was essentially like a last-chance kind of guy on a roster this year, I think it's cool. Like, to me, that was just cool that he got to – a guy like that finishes the World Series as opposed to, you know, your traditional Mo Rivera, you know, closer extraordinaire type. It was such – it was a really, really interesting series to watch. And I have to admit, having no dog in the fight, I find myself very happy that the Nationals won.
Yeah, I would have been happy with either team winning. But it was nice to see Davey Martinez and the Nationals celebrate. You know, and especially, never mind what that team went through this year during the regular season. Of course, we know about the standings. And as a matter of fact, I believe it was Faisal Kamiza tweeted out that take a look at where the Blue Jays were in the standings, what their record was the day that the Washington Nationals were 19-30. They weren't much worse.
Really? I think the Tigers too, right? And then the Tigers went south too.
But I think watching that game last night, I think Davey Martinez sticking with Max Scherzer, not getting anybody up in the bullpen when Max Scherzer's like bobbing and weaving and essentially playing rope-a-dope, and Houston's got guys on base all the time and they're not coming through with a big hit. To see a manager in this day and age where everybody changes pitchers at a whim basically say, no, I'm sticking with this guy. I'm not getting anybody up. He had nobody up in the bullpen. When I saw that, and I love seeing managers or coaches show faith in their players. And when I saw that, when I saw the way Dave Martinez managed that game, at that point, I'm kind of thinking, okay, I would really like to see them win, because this is not something a lot of other managers would do. I guarantee you, if Zach Greinke was in the position that Max Scherzer was in, he wouldn't have pitched into the third inning or the fourth inning. But Dave Martinez stuck with his guy. And it was kind of an old school managerial move.
Corbin pitched
it really
great.
Was. Corbin was terrific.
Yeah. What did you think of the move by Hinch to pull Greinke when he did?
I was fine with it. Yeah. At that point, one of my edges is my bullpen. And he's looking across the field, and he's seeing that Dave Martinez is essentially saying, I don't have any faith in these guys at all. And bringing in a guy like Will Harris, who's been nails.
Exactly. He's been great.
I had no problem. With the move.
You tip your hat to Kendrick, but that's, you know. What was a 320-foot home? I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, only thing that happened in the game that I found really odd, I'm just going to, because I was actually at the Raptors game, but I made note of it because I was watching the game.
As you're looking for that, to me, the fourth run was the huge run.
Yeah.
That felt like the backbreaker.
Robinson Chirinos popping up with two on, popping up a bunt. And Shai pointed out this. Baseball managers, the bunt sucks. The bunt is great in the eighth inning. The bunt is great in the ninth inning. Any manager who has his team bunt before the eighth inning should be fired immediately. It doesn't work. You're not going to win a World Series by bunting guys over. You're going to win a World Series by hitting home runs. That was the only thing. And I don't know if Robinson, if he did it on his own or whatever. I saw that and I thought, that's just, yeah.
Well, to me,
dumbass baseball.
Again, that fourth run was huge. The fact that they got to Osuna was big. I have to admit, man, I love Soto. I love that guy. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
I know there would be some conservative old school fans who don't like the trash talking, who don't like the antics. I love it. I think he gets under.
There's not much trash talking. He seems to get along okay with it. There was a lot of byplay. Like, there was a lot of back and forth between him and Chirinos.
I love that. I love guys like that. He makes me want to watch baseball. So I love everything about the guy. He is a phenomenal hitter. He is, I think they were talking about this on the broadcast. I watched both Matt and Buck as well as the Joe Buck, John Smoltz one. But that's, Jeff, the prototype for like the 21-year-old star now in the league. That guy has it all.
Well, yeah. I wouldn't say prototype because I don't think you're going to see too many of them.
Yeah, but I'm saying like the five, two, like this, like as great as I think
Ronald
Vladdy
Acuna
may be.
Is pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. But this guy, I mean, Soto has like MVP kind of written
on. So does Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Those two guys, yeah. I feel like have separated
the point is, this is what Vladdy Jr. has to be for this team to be any good.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever be that defensively, offensively, yes, agree.
Yeah, and I don't think he can be Juan Soto offensively either. Juan Soto, I think, is just a better athlete.
He's a better athlete, whether he's a better hitter.
He's a better hitter.
He is now. I'm not going to write Vladdy off yet, but no doubt Acuna
Juan
and Soto
is not. Juan Soto's not much older than Vladdy.
21, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's better now. Yeah. I mean, listen, it's
anyhow, it's, I mean, we're talking about, you know, a guy who is the, without question, the best young player in baseball.
Yeah.
Awesome. And, you know, the Jays can have some success if Vladdy Jr. is the third best young player in baseball.
Do you think it's not that bad. My guess is the answer is going to be there are no parallels. Do you see are there any learnings for the Toronto Blue Jays?
No.
From the Nationals? No, right?
Okay. Well, there's learning. There's stuff.
Because you can't get Patrick Corbin if you're the Blue Jays.
There's stuff that it shouldn't make you feel really optimistic if you're a Blue Jays fan or a Rays fan or an Orioles fan. Because I think what we've seen now with this World Series, with what the Red Sox did last year, with what the Astros did the year before, with what the Cubs did, they built their teams around homegrown position players. Then they went out and traded or spent money foolishly to bring in veteran pitchers who've already had their Tommy John surgery, who aren't going to be in innings limits, who got a couple, you know, awards. They've got track records. The Jays are never going to be able to bring a Justin Verlander in.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of reasons. Well, Garrett Cole is a trade. I think Garrett Cole is a trade.
Well, I'm talking about now as him a free agent. But yes, I know.
And the only way you're going to do that is to trade your young guys. So this idea that you can build a team, I think anyhow, that you can build a team around a young, homegrown, cost-effective starting rotation, it's great. You got to have one or two guys from within your organization, but this idea that you can afford to spend 9 years developing five of your own starting pitchers and all this stuff, it just doesn't work anymore. You gotta go cheap with your position players, get them young, get them in the majors when they're 21 or 22. Then if you want to, you know, blow your money or spend all your money, then go out and sign free agent pitchers. Go out and sign, and I understand not everybody's a Verlander, but sign a Verlander. Go out and sign these guys that you can put in right away. And I think that's the only, I mean, the opener, closer. Look, managers are always going to do whatever helps them win. If you've got the best bullpen in the world, then you are probably going to err on the side of having your bullpen in the game more than your starters. If you've got better starters than your bullpen, you're going to use your starters. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays didn't go to the opener because they felt like being funky. Yeah, they did it because their starters sucked. Necessity. They didn't have enough starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So there's not any, my two big takeaways, one, as I said, go out, spend money on starting pitchers. Starting pitching is still the equalizer. It covers up all your mistakes. And secondly, and I've never felt this before, but I do now, I would be willing to bet that by the time the next CBA is done, and I think that's 3 years, we'll have an electronic strike zone. We're never going to have the idea of robot umpires, a robot behind home plate, but we are going to have an awful lot of technology in the game. We are going to have the electronic strike zone. That's not even a question anymore.
I agree with that. The I left that series and left the broadcast after listening to the player interviews, and I'm just really impressed by what the Nationals did. I don't know if it's repeatable, but beating Verlander, beating Cole, coming back after being swept at home, winning that city's first baseball championship since whatever it is, 1924. And it was an interesting collection of guys to me. And not to mention, and I think important to mention that, you know, at the beginning of this year, Bryce Harper opted to leave. And that was the major narrative, and correctly so, in Washington. And for them to have won the World Series in the same year that Bryce Harper left. And again, I think Bryce Harper's a little overrated in terms of as a player. Still just an unbelievable achievement. You tip your hat to that organization. They won, to me, a very unexpected World Series.
They kicked the hell out of some real good teams in elimination games.
Yep.
Like, none of these... The thing that must be said about this World Series, and we should remind people, by the way, the final score was 6-2 last night.
Yeah.
And the Astros winning Game 7, or the Nationals winning Game 7. None of the games are close. And I think that is going to... When people sit back and look at this World Series, I think people are going to say it wasn't as competitive. It's weird. It went 7 games. The road teams won all the games. Of course it was competitive, Jeff. But it wasn't as competitive as the individual games weren't as competitive
right.
as I thought they'd be.
You would think, you make a good point, because you would think a series that goes 7 would have tight,
yes.
taut games.
Lots of extra inning games,
didn't
right?
Didn't have any of that.
No.
It's kind of within, interestingly enough, the series was tight, but the games within the games were not.
And I got to tell you
that to me feels like a big anomaly.
And I got to tell you, maybe the most interesting thing about, or one of the most interesting things, there's thousands of interesting things in this World Series, I think, but maybe one of the real interesting aspects of this is the Houston Astros go into Washington, win 3 games going away. Their bullpen, I mean, they had everything set up.
Yep.
Their bullpen isn't shot because they've been winning 7 6-run games. The starting pitching's not shot. They got an off day. They got everything set up for them. And I think watching A.J. Hinch's post-game news conference, what I took away was a manager thinking, we should have won that. We should have won that World Series. We should have had Scherzer out of the game in the second or third inning. We had everything you could possibly have going for you
right.
in a 7-game series. The Nationals had, the Astros had going for
it. If I just told you this and you were betting, like if I just told you the Astros lead the series 3-2, they're going back to Houston, and they have Verlander and Zach Greinke as the starters. You would look at me
and like a day off, so Cole's going to be able to pitch out of the bullpen one of those days.
The series is over.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it'll be six, maybe it's seven, no doubt. But there's no chance the Nationals have.
No doubt.
And like that.
Game seven, I think, is a coin flip.
With Greinke on full rest and
Cole ready to go,
and Scherzer still quite, haven't seen him pitch. The Astros had everything, and I do, again, this is one of the things I love about game sevens in sports, is that you could have the best 25, or, in basketball, the best 12. You could have the best analytics. You could have the best of everything. But on that night, you still have to win, or the discussion is different.
Right.
And, the Astros are going to do, Jeff, I think, a lot of analysis, self-analysis of what went wrong, even though if you look at their year in total, they had a phenomenal year. I mean, one of the best, I think you would know this better than me, but they strike me as like one of the 20 best teams in the last like 40, 50 years, this group of Astros. I understand they lost, but you know what I'm saying? If you statistically looked at them against the best teams in the last 40 years, they stand up well.
If they'd won game seven, we'd be talking about them as being maybe not a dynasty, but we'd be saying that they are positioned to become.
Absolutely.
They are positioned to become perhaps, perhaps like the Yankees.
Yeah, or the Reds. You'd be thinking of them in those dynastic terms. Yes. Of those teams. But now that conversation changes.
Yeah.
And by the way, they'd probably still, I'll have to figure out what happens. They'd still, I think, be my favorite heading into
the season. They are. Vegas has made them I believe Vegas has made them the preseason.
It's interesting.
I believe Vegas made them favorites last night. I could be wrong. I know it was Yankees, Dodgers, and Astros were the top three.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So again, congratulations, the Washington Nationals. They beat the Houston Astros 6-2 in Game 7 to win the World Series. Our friends Toronto FC beating Atlanta United 2-1. They're off to Seattle for the MLS Cup, the third time in 4 years these two teams have met. It is the rubber match. Toronto FC, of course, winning at home. Seattle winning here as well. This will be the first time the teams have met in Seattle. So we've got a busy show coming up. John Clayton, 710 ESPN in Seattle, joins us. The professor will be along. We'll talk a little NFL. Dan Shulman, who had the call of the game, and a terrific call it was last night on ESPN, joins us at 3:25. Ren LaVar, NHL insider. Tom Lavaro, my friend Lovey, sports columnist with the Washington Times, and the only man who will be on this station who has been in The Wire, and I think he may have been in The Sopranos as well. I'm sure he'll tell us. Tom Lavaro will be along, longtime baseball writer for the Washington Times, so we'll get the Washington take on the World Series. It's Writer's Block with Deitch and Blair on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
A reminder that next week we're going to be putting together a collection of guilty pleasure playlists to all the folks involved in this show. Deitch is going to get us going on Monday, so he's already thinking about it. I can tell.
A lot of Echo and the Bunnymen coming.
Guilty pleasure is music you would not listen to around your boys. Your kids, your boys. I'm sure you have boys. Your guys. Or if you're a woman around your girls. You know what I mean?
It's very boring now.
You wouldn't, stuff that you wouldn't. Hey, guys, you know what? Let's sit around and
right.
Yeah, let's sit around and do a bong and listen to One Direction. Nuts. You know what I'm saying? Like you wouldn't stuff that only you will listen to in the privacy of whatever it is you do when you're private.
Might drop the Bangles then. How about that?
That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay.
I will. I will guiltily admit I might have as part of my 6-song playlist, I might have a Bangles song in there.
General rule of thumb though is if it's a good song, it's not a guilty pleasure. It has to suck. Like it's something that if you put it this way, you've died. It's your funeral.
Right.
All your friends have gathered to send you off. And somebody gets up, who's reading doing your eulogy.
Epitaph, whatever. Yeah, right. Eulogy.
Our friend Richard has put together a playlist of his favorite songs, and we're going to play them during the funeral. And they're going to have a person playing the guitar.
Right.
And they're going to sing your song. The 6 songs that you would not have played there.
At the funeral. Got it.
So if you like it, don't.
Okay. I'll come up with something. Yeah. A lot of pressure that I have to be first on this.
Hairbands, Poison. There's a lot of places you go. Poison.
We went down the road yesterday.
Anyhow.
Bon Jovi and Poison are garbage.
Toronto FC, as we all predicted, Toronto FC is off to the MLS Cup for the third time in 4 years. And for the third time in 4 years, they will be facing Seattle Sounders. I don't know which of these two teams, if you put them up against a wall this morning, would probably tell you that they're more surprised to be there. I mean, Seattle had to beat a real good LA team.
Yeah, great team.
And Toronto's been on some kind of roll. Taylor Twellman is soccer analyst with ESPN, and Taylor Twellman joins Deitch and myself on Writer's Block to discuss this and other matters. Hello, Mr. Twellman.
How are you guys?
We're doing well. Who's more surprised to be in this final, Seattle or Toronto?
That's a really good question. I would probably say Seattle, in the sense that they had to go beat arguably the greatest season we've ever seen, and I know Toronto fans will argue about what they did, you know, in 17, and yet when you look at LAFC, they broke all those records and the way they got after it, how dominant they've been at home. Seattle needed arguably their best performance they've ever had in franchise history, and I just think Toronto's understated in the sense that when you look at them since 2016, the truth of the matter is this group of players has played probably some of the biggest games. So they've had that experience. They had to go win a game on a baseball field in New York before the playoffs started. I had predicted that Toronto would win that. And now last night's win against Atlanta was a little fortunate. Jose Martinez misses a penalty, but you got to give Toronto a ton of credit for persevering, for fighting through that. They're missing Omar Gonzalez, Jose Altidore. So to answer your question, I think Seattle's got to be not more surprised that they are in it, but just in the manner that they do it, and ultimately that they're hosting MLS Cup, because that's a huge surprise, I think, to everyone in Seattle. Mm.
Taylor, you and Ian Dark will have this game for the American broadcast on ESPN?
John Champion.
John Champion will do it. But Taylor, you luck out. Yep. You work with some of the great soccer voices of all time.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. Kind of feel like Alex Rodriguez when he signed the $300 million deal with the Rangers, and then the Yankees said, you know what, let's extend that to another 10 years. I kind of feel like A-Rod.
Well, I'll say this.
Not the same numbers, Richard.
I was just going to say, Taylor, you work at the new ESPN. Let's forget about Alex Rodriguez numbers.
That's a low blow. Jesus. God.
Taylor's doing fine. Signed a really long-term deal with ESPN. He's okay. Taylor, so in terms of Toronto FC, you have watched MLS this year, and there's a clear sort of line where the club sort of became a different club. I don't know what the number is exactly, but they're like, I think 7-0-1 in the last eight games, or 8-0-1, something to that effect. So from afar,
especially
on the road. What, in your opinion, Taylor, what changed? What changed for this group, at least, you know, halfway, three quarters in the season?
Well, it's interesting, Richard, because what you bring up is a lot of people within MLS circles, and I think a lot of people in Toronto, as of June 1st, July 1st, wanted to blow this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wondered if they were too old, if they hadn't signed the right players. You know, Pozuelo has been a great signing, a fantastic signing. He's really almost made Jovinko forgotten, as harsh as that may sound. But
good point.
Pozuelo's been great. I think the biggest thing is they went and got Omar Gonzalez. Since Omar Gonzalez has signed the team, even though he hasn't played in these playoff games, they've only lost one of, if not 16, 17 games. So that solidified the back line. But I'm going to go back to my previous answer. There's a real experience within this group of playing in big games, 16, 17, MLS Cup Finals, CONCACAF Champions League Final. Even though they haven't gone their way for them necessarily, they've had that experience. And I just think, right around August 1st, Greg Vanney, you know, kind of pushed that button and said, listen, we did forget about the previous 4.5-5 months. All we need to do is get into the playoffs. Yes, we're going to have to go win some road games, but they're unbeaten in their last eight games on the road with Greg Vanney at the helm. So I think experience came through. Now, Richard, truth of the matter is it kind of takes away from this MLS Cup one-and-done game and the momentum that it did, making the regular season more important, because ultimately Toronto was the ninth best team in MLS, and it's kind of reverted back to the old ways of saying, if you get hot at the right time, you get through. But I just think it really is the experience of this group said, you know what, we've got 2 months to right the ship. They've done that. And now if they get Jose Altidore back, who knows in this MLS Cup what they can do again on the road in Seattle.
In conversation with Taylor Twellman of ESPN. Let me throw something at you, Taylor. And I heard you and the call of the game you and Ian had in the Canada-U.S. Canada-U.S. match here.
Taylor,
I listened to it. It was terrific. I actually gave you an inordinate amount of credit in my column that I wrote on it. But I may be off base here, but can I ask you, why is Greg Vanney not coaching the U.S. men's team?
I don't know that. I honestly
should he be?
I came up with he should have been in the conversation, absolutely. And the fact that he didn't get an interview is completely irresponsible and ridiculous from the U.S. Soccer Federation. That's fact, not opinion. I think when you have the worst moment in your federation's history and losing in Trinidad and you don't go to the World Cup, Jeff, quite honestly, you should have interviewed 12 to 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to hire 12 to 15 people, but you're going to pick up little things from 12 and 15 people that they see about the federation. You take your notes, you do your due diligence. They say they interviewed two people. I'm not even sure they even interviewed Oscar Perea. It's irresponsible, and it's now a byproduct of what it is. And listen, it's not a slight on Greg Berhalter, but Greg Berhalter, excuse me, is a very young, inexperienced coach that had glimpses of some real good stuff with the Columbus Crew, but you had Tata Martino say publicly, I am very interested in the United States soccer men's national team head job, and you say he doesn't speak English. Like, are we really having that kind of conversation?
Right.
So when this process was going on, to answer your question, I had six guys with a higher winning percentage than Greg Berhalter. Greg Vanney was number two on that list. Absolutely, 100%. Greg Vanney should have been interviewed. He should have been interviewed twice. I'm not sure he should have got that job, but I know sure as heck he should have been in the conversation because he had the same amount of experience. He had more success than Greg Berhalter. Yes, he had a larger checkbook. So what? It is what it is. But the fact that you don't interview Jesse Marsh, Greg Vanney, Tata Martino, you go around the world. I think that's a byproduct of where we are now, and it's unfortunate, but it is irresponsible for the Federation to not have done their due diligence. Mm.
Taylor, understandably, you spent a lot of time on what you thought of the U.S.'s performance against Canada that night because, of course, you're an American broadcaster and you do the U.S. national team games. But you are someone, I know this, who has spent a lot of time watching Canada. You're very familiar with their players. Uh-huh. From your perspective, what did you think of the Canadian men's national team?
For the first time watching the Canadian national team in a long time, they had a couple game changers, and they're both young. I think the fact that Alfonso Davies and David, and you've got guys like this that can now all of a sudden haven't even touched the peak of their career. They're playing at a high level over in Europe. They've got now a couple game changers. But the one thing the Canadians have always had, and by the way, the United States has had this as well, is team unity, an ability to roll up your sleeves and win an ugly game if you have to. There is a real belief from the Canadian national team. And now you add in some quality. Keep in mind, Mark Anthony Kay came out 6 minutes into the game. Mm-hmm. He'd start for the U.S. men's national team right now if he was healthy. They're good. They are a solid team. They're going to play themselves into the hex. I said that 2 years ago, the moment I saw Jonathan David and Alfonso Davies play. They've got to figure out their back line. Richard, that's fact, not opinion. That back line is porous, and it just makes that United States performance even more mind-boggling because the one Achilles heel for the Canadian men's national team is the center back position. They struggle there. They don't have enough quality there at the international level, but their midfield can make up for that, and I think you saw that against the United States.
Mm. Taylor, where is MLS right now? Is it? Do you think it's in a good place?
I do. You know, it's a good question because I think too often we get caught up in these expansion stories with the Atlantas and the LAFCs and Miami coming in and now Nashville and St. Louis and who knows where that goes. And yet I don't think Toronto gets enough credit. I'm not saying this because I'm talking to you guys in Canada. The fact of the matter is, in the Major League Soccer that I played in, when Toronto came in, there was a real change of fandom and what it meant. People were drinking beers. It was young professionals. It wasn't families. It wasn't kids in the stands. It was men. It was women. It was young. They were arguing. They were booing. I remember 2017 MLS Cup. I was giving out the MLS Cup trophy in the stands. I told Richard this story, and I got booed because of the Revolution versus Toronto game. And me being in Toronto scoring goals, that's where the real arrival of Major League Soccer has come. Seattle took it to another level, and now on top of it, you throw LAFC and Atlanta. MLS is in a real good spot. In saying that, there's still a ton of room to grow, and I think a big place that it needs to grow is you've got to find a way in these games that we see in the playoffs, and we're going to announce today, we had over 800,000 people in back-to-back playoff games, guys. Watch this game via Deportes and ESPN. Those are massive numbers. How do you get that to watch regular season? How do you make your regular season have more jeopardy to it? And I think that's part of the growth of MLS. I still think they're trying to figure it out, expansion coming in. But if you add that element, I know there's no promotion relegation, but you can still add that. If they find that, I think all of a sudden you're going to see some real interesting growth to this league. And you're having younger players come over. I know Zlatan scored, 60 goals in 2 years as a 55-year-old. But the truth of the matter is the Joseph Martinez of the world and the Miguel Amarones that are sold, Carlos Vela coming over before he's 30. That's where the real change of this league has happened compared to when, I was playing and it was David Beckham, Thierry Henry, and Juan Pablo Angel.
Yeah, and we also have to mention, though, Taylor, that Zlatan is Zlatan. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's what he does. We've got the Statue of Liberty in the United States. As he said, Sweden's got a Statue of Zlatan.
That's well said. Taylor, thanks for doing this, man. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Taylor.
No problem, boys.
Take care. Taylor Twellman of ESPN. And they do, like I said, that telecast of that match.
They were phenomenal. And by the way, dead on. Totally accurate.
Oh, yeah. And Taylor, man, he's been on point when it comes to the U.S. Soccer Association.
When
US
the engine
soccer.
Starts revving up, if the U.S. national team's not playing
he buries guys.
He's all over it. And the U.S. is in major trouble.
Yeah,
the program is in significant trouble, no direction. And what has to be scary for them is, with this Michael Bradley sort of generation getting older, other than Christian Pulisic, like the young players particularly look like game changers.
They've got a couple of good young players like this Tyler Adams.
He looks good. He's the
guy
other
they
one,
talk
right.
about. He's getting a lot of play, but you know, Jeff, it's not the same generation as
like the Clint Dempsey. We're not so far removed. The Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, that world, like from people talking about the U.S. one day as being a top five team. That's over. They will, in my opinion, be lucky to qualify for the 2022 World Cup.
Oh, I think they will, too. I think they will, too.
They may, but I don't think it's going to be easy, and I think they may get in by the skin of their teeth, but it's no longer a guarantee the way people were talking in, 2010, 2012. U.S. is going to be Germany, Brazil. They've made the jump. That never happened.
We will step away. When we come back, we'll get you set for the 3 o'clock hour. John Clayton, Dan Shulman joining us. It's Writer's Block. I was going to say with Brunt and Blair, but it's Deitch and Blair.
Brunt can come in later.
He can if you want. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Another day breaks and the last one's gone. You dig deep just to carry on.
All right, screw it. We're playing Montreal music for our radio listeners because I'm declaring an Expos World Series. Well, not really, but I'm saying if you want to take a little bit of happiness from it, feel free. Ren Lavoie, speaking of Montreal, our NHL insider from TVS Sports, will be along at 4 o'clock. The Leafs, with a lot of time to sit and simmer and stew, they play Saturday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, CBC and Sportsnet Ontario, Hockey Night in Canada. They are in Philadelphia to take on the Flyers. And we'll take a look around the NHL with Ren Lavoie. Yes.
I don't know if we're going to get to this, so I just want to get to this quick since before we had to break. Did you happen to see two things yesterday, both NBA related? One, the crazy score between the Rockets and the Wizards, Houston versus Washington,
right,
in another sport, which I think was 159-158, and maybe the crazier stuff, Joel Embiid and Karl-Anthony Towns.
Explain this to me, because I caught it in the medium. I caught it while it was going on.
Right.
But I didn't, like, really process it. And I've been following it, unfortunately. I've been following it largely on social media.
That's great, though.
But,
don't be a dumb,
and I've heard the interview with Karl-Anthony Towns where he...
Both the guys were great.
Where he repeats, it's a competitive game about 20 times. So walk me through it.
So they get into...
Oh, by the way, Steph Curry, broken hand.
Yeah,
didn't
mention that
it.
Actually... The Warriors may honestly want to think about intentionally tanking at this point.
They'd be able to get something for Dan.
And Draymond's hurt, too.
Yeah.
So
shut it down.
Yeah, that season's over for them.
Anyhow,
Anyways. Sorry,
go ahead.
So they get into, two guys, very prominent guys, all stars, big dudes, Karl-Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, get into in the NBA considered, I would say, a real scrap. You don't often see punches sort of semi-thrown. But then, like the NBA, of course, Jeff, it never sort of ends on the court.
Right.
It extends to social media.
Well, that's
so
wonderful.
They're posting.
Why,
like,
we love the NBA.
Yeah, they're posting against each other on Instagram. They're calling. Hopefully, I could use this word. They're calling each other the word bitch. They're just. It's like become one.
Oh, you can't use the word bitch.
I can't on this.
No, never use bitch.
So they're basically having like a massive social media pissing contest, but they're really getting
Did you just use another swear word?
What, pissed?
Yeah,
that I know you're allowed to use. So they're really getting into it.
I'm wearing off on you, Deitch. I'm wearing off on you.
If you are an NBA fan and haven't checked this out, go on their social media feeds because they have been going at it now for 24 hours. And it's very testosterone-driven, mano a mano. But again, Jeff, this is my only point. That is the only sport where people at that level of stardom would ever do this. You would never see Drew Brees and Tom Brady going at it. You would never see Mike Trout and Juan Soto going at it on social media. It is. I have always found, and I think it's one of the reasons basketball is popular. Some would argue maybe they don't like this stuff. I do. It is fascinating to me how these guys, young guys now in their 20s, their life, their social media life is an extension of their real life.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's just fascinating.
Well, and what's also interesting when you follow, I mean, it's kind of like, it's almost like being a voyeur, right? I mean, you're looking at it from the outside, and the fascinating thing is when people start to weigh in, like teammates or opposing players start to weigh in.
Right.
That's, and because it's the NBA, you may get a movie star weighing in. You never know.
Or another player. This is where the NBA is great. Like Donovan McNabb on social media was basically complaining about Kevin Durant and all stuff. So all of a sudden Kevin Durant responds and goes, "Relax, McNabb." And like literally a million people retweet that. But these guys, like I feel like they intrinsically understand that part of this is we are voyeurs and a lot of this is entertainment.
Yeah.
And they have branded themselves through these mediums.
And God love them.
Entertainment.
I have nothing wrong with a feud being extended on social media.
Same here.
I'd rather have that as opposed to guys
meeting up later that night and
exactly.
really fighting, which, which would be, I think most NBA guys, if you talk to like guys like Barkley and Oakley, some tough guys, like they've always used to say like 90% of NBA is sort of fake tough guys.
Yeah.
The problem is you don't want to run into the real tough guy.
No.
Like, and there were some guys like Matt Barnes and some other dudes
James Johnson.
Yeah, they
James
would like
Johnson,
Maurice
bad
Lucas
man.
Back in the day. Yeah. Like, they would really kill you. So you always make sure that if you're going to fight with somebody, like, pick the right partner.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The Raptors, by the way, we did not mention this, beat the Pistons 125-113. Which NBA player has the most 30-point games to start the season?
I'm going to say Pascal Siakam.
You got it.
All five?
That's what I was told last night on social media. No, that's what I was watching the telecast, and they made that point. I don't know what happened in the later games, but he's so locked in. He was on pace for a triple-double. with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left in the first quarter.
If you're
sick.
If you're a Raptors fan, one thing that is a massive positive, and again, they haven't, you know, it's early, but Pascal has not backed down from being the focal point.
The thing that worries me, we'll talk about this later in the show, maybe turnovers.
Turnovers. You got to live with this.
This team turns over the ball way too much. Clayton's next. NFL talk, writer's block.
When you choose to work with a deadline for your entire working life, you got to be a little bit crazy. And crazy is great radio. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
A reminder, by the way, that if you want to listen to the show in its entirety, if you can't make it because you're at work or it doesn't fit in with your commuting schedule, you can follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And like us, subscribe. What is it you say? Like us, subscribe to us?
No, you say you want to...
Because you are a podcast meister.
Well, my own podcast, yeah. You want to subscribe to the podcast first and foremost, and then, which we really appreciate, you want to leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that helps with rankings
on
Apple.
Don't give people the secrets.
No, I got to tell them. Okay. It helps with rankings on Apple Podcasts. And beyond that, it is the kind of it's the kind of stuff that management will look at. They will read the comments. I'm going to be honest. And you do get judged on that kind of stuff. Jeff, you can't snow the audience here. So subscribe, 5-star review, and enjoy Writer's Block.
And if you don't do it, Deitch is being fired. That's basically what you're saying.
I'm going to check the contract. It's always possible.
That's basically what you're saying.
But yeah, please, because as we head into...
As we head into
a new media landscape, people are going to be listening to the show at all sorts of different times.
Yes.
Both live and
dead.
And at your convenience. And I do hope down the road, Jeff, that we do provide some extra stuff on the podcast. We'll eventually get to that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I was thinking of maybe doing some singing, maybe telling some off-color jokes.
Let me tell you this.
That's how you do it.
The people who
maybe
really
have a
push
Barker segment.
The people who really push their podcast, and I will tip my hat to them.
It's what you call winning.
That's what you call winning. Yeah.
Good show, guys. They are there's a promo almost every hour for their podcast. I give them credit for that.
Yeah.
Young Ennis and Young Bunkus.
Young Ennis?
Good work. Good work by them. Is Ennis young? Yeah, Ben still fits
Bunkus
in my...
Bunkus and Ennis.
Is Ben Ennis a millennial? I think so.
Yeah, Christ, he's a millennial.
Well, I know Bunkus is, but I think Ennis is still too. Bunkus may be like Gen Y or whatever's next.
Yeah. It's Gen something. Anyhow.
Bunkus. Is one all I say about J.D. Bunkus is last year, went on a rant I was once listening to about, he was willing to trade Pascal Siakam for someone who wasn't that good. Nearly like, I think I was walking somewhere in the Danforth area. I literally wanted to throw a chair through a window. I was so pissed off. Thank God someone.
That happens quite often.
Yeah, I think Ennis talked him off.
Wouldn't happen.
Imagine having traded Pascal Siakam now.
Oh, stop.
If you're listening, Bunkus, don't ever go down that road again.
Stop it.
Pascal's untouchable. Like Jeff Blair at this station. Untouchable, baby.
See what I'm doing to you right now?
Is that the
John thing? Clayton is host.
We're not supposed to curse.
710 ESPN.
Segment.
I didn't curse.
All right, good.
I did not curse. Host on 710 ESPN in Seattle. And speaking of podcasts, he, of course, has a podcast, Schooled with the Professor. Hence the reason I call him the Professor. The Professor joins us. NFL classes in. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. We're doing...
Yeah, I know you're promoting the podcast. That's great.
Thanks, John. We're doing better than the Dolphins, John.
Everybody's doing better than the Dolphins. Almost everybody. Houston's doing better than the Dolphins.
John, are you in Seattle right now?
I am in Seattle. That is correct.
What is... How big is Halloween in Seattle?
I guess it's big. I mean, at least you know that there's going to be, people going around and, trying kids and all that stuff. I mean, big family type town and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's reasonably big. I mean, probably bigger downtown than it is maybe because, you have some of the crazies downtown that will try to do it. I mean, there's some more families out here in the suburbs.
No, I figured. I mean, John, have you bought candy tonight, John?
Oh,
I did not, no.
John.
Oh, you didn't?
We'll keep the lights low and hope that everybody kind of passes by.
Wow. I like it. Learn something new about John Playing every day. John, let's...
Actually, you know what is fun to do sometime? We used to do this when we were in university.
What's that?
Is like decorate the joint up for Halloween and have no candy. So when the kids come to the door, say, "No, you give me some of your candy." It's great. Larry, it just freaks them out.
You are a Grinch.
Well, of course. I mean, the one thing that I'll do is that, you know, I have to go get food, but, you know, go out and buy food every night, and right. So I'm going to try to bolt as soon as I can. I have a radio hit at like 4, and so then maybe by 4:30 I'll be away, so I don't have to worry about answering the door.
Yeah, John, it's always a crowded night on Halloween. All right, let us move to your expertise, John, and that is football. We are, of course, in this city, relatively close to the city of Buffalo. And the Bills are kind
Unfortunately.
Of, yeah, the Bills are, I love Buffalo. The Bills are an interesting story, John, in that a record is very, very good. But if you look at sort of all the analytics and the metrics and maybe even the eye test, they look like a very mediocre football team to me. Have you, from your perspective, what are the Buffalo Bills right now?
I mean, it's similar to what happened a couple of years ago when they made the playoffs along with Tennessee. Because remember that year, 2 years ago, they had given up more points than they had scored. Mm. And normally that means you're a 7-win team, unless you're as many points as the Dolphins give away and you're a no-win team. But you know, if you are like a minus 20, something like that, you can do that. Well, it's even more pronounced this year because there's so many bad teams in the AFC. I mean, you got like 10 bad, nine to 10 bad teams in the AFC. And of course, they're in a division right now that has two of those bad teams, you know, the Jets and the Dolphins. So what they're doing is they're feasting on the bad teams on an easy schedule. I mean, right now, I think their schedule is like 3-8 as far as the opponents that they've played. And so that's one of the reasons they've got the 5-2 start. And, you know, but when you project everything out, their schedule's still going to remain relatively easy. So this is probably an 8-win team that's going to end up winning 11.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, what do you make of the Chicago Bears? Strange season. We are going into the second half. You know, I don't think there's anybody in Chicago that thinks Mitchell Trubisky's the answer. What happens in the second half with the Bears? Because that, I mean, you know, that's pretty good defense. They squandered a lot of good defense.
Yeah, but it's not as good as it was last year.
Right.
But in the same vein as the Buffalo Bills this year, you know, you look at the Chicago Bears, and you can make the comparison that the Bills are the Chicago Bears of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because go back to Chicago and realize they won 12 games. And they did it with Mitch Trubisky,
right.
But they only played 5 teams with 500 records or better. And so that means they went 4-1 against, you know, decent teams, and they went 8-3 against bad teams, you know, losing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why now this year, when they're in a division where, you know, you've got, you know, 2 playoff caliber teams in Green Bay and Minnesota, and you also have a better Detroit team at 500. So they've got, you know, 6 games against, you know, teams that are 500 or better there. That's more in the division than they played last year. So I think what it comes down to, and this is what the Bills have to worry about too, you know, you're going to come to earth next year if your schedule is going to be tougher. And so with the schedule being tougher, you know, teams are running on them. On the Bears, which, of course, you didn't think that was going to happen, particularly with the linebackers in the front 7. And then Trubisky has been absolutely awful as far as, you know, his footwork, his decision-making, all those things. So when you have a decline in the quarterback, a tougher schedule, and you're not as good on defense, you know, you have that 3-4 start.
John, I always, and I imagine you're like me on this, you always want to be careful about not reading into anything when a player sort of goes off in a press conference or goes off with a certain media member, as Baker Mayfield did this week. But what is very clear about the Browns is that we're at a point in the season where it feels like the season is going to go one of two ways. They're either going to turn things around with, I think, a fairly easy schedule at this point versus their previous games, or it's really going to continue to get sort of tighter and tenser and uglier in Cleveland. Do you have a sense right now of which way you think the Browns will go from this point on?
You know, because you're right about the schedule. Because you know, I was looking at it the second half, and, you know, when you look at projected wins and things of that nature, you know, they should be able to get the 7 wins, much like they did last year. But I just look at the way the team is, and it looks poorly coached. It looks off. And, of course, then you have Baker Mayfield almost even not calling out the coach, but saying things derogatory toward the players. I mean, you know, he's oh, I take the blame for it, but, he, you know, don't believe in what he says it. And then what he does is he says, well, we got guys that aren't playing hard. We're not focused. We're not doing all the right things. And then and he calls out his offensive line, which is not good. It's like, hey, when I'm trying to make a play call and all that stuff, and we get all these false starts, that's not good. So, I mean, they just look like a team that's unfocused. And if that's going to be the case, they're going to lose to the losing teams. And if they lose to the losing teams, this season is going to go south. And unfortunately, as much as everybody likes Kitchens as a head coach, I mean, as far as he's such a good guy, he's not done anything to really get this team to play harder and to play better. And so with that in mind, I mean, they should get wins, but they should have got more wins in the first half of the season.
John, I want to follow up on this because I want to ask you about Freddie Kitchens. Probably he might be the most criticized coach in the league. I am sure they will not do this, but is there ever a case to make a midseason change to try to really, really shake things up?
I mean, usually what you have to think of is that, and I mean, you just watched it a couple of weeks ago with the Washington Redskins. You saw how well that worked with the firing of Jay Gruden.
Yep.
I mean, they haven't won.
You're right.
But yeah, I mean, and it could happen because, again, I mean, NFL owners fire too many coaches. You don't give them enough time. And now you've got the situation is there enough coaches out there as a pool to be able to fill in and get better? And you look at what happened this year. I mean, 8 coaches are new. 5 of them didn't win a game in September. 5 had zeros. I mean, it was 0-4, or in the case of Cliff Kingsbury, 0-3-1. And so is there enough that even next year, if you have the 7 or 8 normal firings, that you can get enough good coaches in to make things better? But no, I mean, you would have to put Freddie on a week-by-week basis right now to see if things don't get better. Now, the question is, I mean, do you give Steve Wilkes the job? Because he at least is a head coach for a year in Arizona, or what do you do to try to replace him? Because it's not like in a mid-season move, you're not going to go outside to get anybody. So it has to be somebody inside, and all those coaches inside are working with the coaches that aren't getting things done on the field.
John, I don't know who is going to face. Well, I was going to say who's going to face the bigger test this weekend, but I think because it's New England, that question's probably moot. But I guess what I'm getting at is Lamar Jackson is going to be something New England hasn't had to prepare for. How do you see that playing out? And how much of an issue is Lamar Jackson for the Pats? And how much of an issue is their defense for Lamar Jackson?
Well, and that's what I think every defensive coach in the league is going to be looking at this game to see what Bill Belichick does. Because, mm-hmm. This is the toughest game I think they played. Now, I know they played Buffalo, but I think right now Baltimore is a little bit better than Buffalo, even though the records are the same. But I think what you can watch is that, this is right now a situation where they can kind of come in and, you saw how creative he was in stopping Goff last year in the Super Bowl. And you'll find, I mean, I don't know if they're going to go 6-man line. I don't know what they're going to do, but they'll come up with something to try to control Lamar Jackson. And that creative thing is going to be something that's going to carry through for the next couple of weeks. But, I mean, Lamar is just such a great runner. I mean, something we really haven't seen. I mean, maybe since Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. And he is so tough to stop, and he's so smart in his ability to run. So that's going to be the challenge. But, again, I think the challenge right now is probably bigger on Lamar going against the Patriots than maybe the Patriots against Lamar because, it's not a great offensive line.
Right.
They have some issues right there. And, it's one where, is there enough wide receiver help to make it all work? But again, I think that the fascinating thing, that's why it's one of the few fascinating games this weekend, because there's a lot of one-sided type of games coming up. But I think that this one's the most interesting.
I've heard other people talk about Lamar Jackson in the same way, and they use sort of the similar words. He's a smart runner. Explain what makes a smart runner compared to – just a running quarterback.
Well, because he seems to have that instinct to know when to break and when to run.
Okay.
Because, again, sometimes you run into tackles.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot with running quarterbacks. But what he seems to do, he seems to know when to stop and then when to start going straight ahead. And then his speed is absolutely incredible. And so, I mean, he knows how to make the right angles to avoid tackles. He knows how to go down and, not get hit too hard, even though what he doesn't have right now and he needs to develop is a slide. Because it was not like he's an ex-baseball player like Russell Wilson or some of the others, Patrick Mahomes and that. He's not an ex-baseball player, but boy, I mean, if he can even get a slide, he can avoid a lot. But he's very smart in being able to know when to run when he's scrambling around.
John, I think those of us in this part of Canada as well as in the east coast of the United States, we don't really see a lot of the 49ers. And so I'm speaking for myself here. I don't have a great feel for them. At the same time, I absolutely respect their record, and records don't lie. Like, this is clearly a really good team. What I want to know from you, particularly that you are in that part of the country where you'd see them more, are we talking a legitimate Super Bowl team, Super Bowl contender, or does that question still remain unanswered even though they're 7-0?
Yeah, I still think that question remains, but they're a legitimate playoff team, and right now a legitimate team to maybe get a bye week. And of course, you can get a bye week. Anything can happen, because all you have to do is win, you know, one or two home games. I mean, are they as good as New Orleans? No. I mean, the record's right now a little bit better, but I think New Orleans is more of a complete team. But what you can look at is that this team is going to make the playoffs. You know, they've got a great defensive line. I mean, to think about, you know, that's the ironic part about tonight's game. You know, Arizona and San Francisco had the top two picks in the draft because they were that bad.
You're right.
Now what you look at is that now you've got Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa right now is the defensive rookie of the year. Yeah. They're going with DeForest Buckner, who's one of the best interior defensive tackles, and they got Kwame Alexander in the you know, in free agency. So their front seven is good. Richard Sherman's back to playing at a Pro Bowl level. And so they do have some weaknesses, maybe at safety and maybe one of the linebacker spots, but they're good on defense. Kyle Shanahan is the best run play caller in football. And they've got, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's solid at quarterback. Mm-hmm. So they've got all the mix, the defense, the running game, the quarterback. And again, that's why they can be dangerous. But the question is going to be, when you get into the playoffs, you know, can Garoppolo beat a Drew Brees? Can he beat a Russell Wilson? So who can he beat? That's going to be the bigger question.
John, you've covered the NFL for a long, long time. So you have seen the dysfunction of this team for many decades. Why can the New York Jets not figure it out management-wise? I mean, it sells a lot of papers in New York, but it feels like the players...
Bearing in mind, it's a Jets fan talking here, right?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it's the players are different, John, but the narrative always remains the same, and the narrative is dysfunction.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, I mean, this is about as dysfunctional as you can find, because, you know, here they went, spent big in free agency, second biggest group. And, of course, what did they get? I mean, C.J. Mosley is a very good player, but then he's got a groin injury. He's had 9 tackles, and he's making $1 million. And he's going to be out another 5 to 6 weeks. You know, the Le'Veon Bell signing turned out to be a disaster. He's averaging 2.6 yards a carry. And now you've got Adam Gase, who comes in as an offensive coach with Sam Darnold, and he's got 7 touchdowns offensively in 7 mm-hmm. games.
Right.
I mean, it's an absolute disaster. And so, you know, one, they tend to want to keep changing coaches, and you don't know if they make the right decisions there. Two, you know, they don't seem to have a consistent plan where you can say, okay, this thing's going well. And it's because it's like you saw in the last relationship, the general manager was not on the same page as the head coach. So I think, you know, what they need to do, and of course, one of the mistakes I think they're making this year is they're giving the head coach, Adam Gase, who I like, too much power. Because, I mean, they gave him the general manager of his choice, and look at how bad the team is. The offensive line is awful. The defense is thin. I mean, how about the fact today they had to put the fifth inside linebacker down with an injured reserve? They are down their top 5 inside linebackers.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard that before. That's amazing.
No. Yeah.
John, thanks for doing this, man. Always great. Enjoy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, John. Okay. Get back in the house quick.
Okay.
See ya.
Adios.
Bye.
That's John Clayton, 710 ESPN in Seattle. We can hear him 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, 11 a.m.
I was going to say,
p.m. Eastern time.
I took a gamble on my Halloween question with John. It failed.
I wouldn't say it failed.
I figured John Clayton would be a guy who'd be excited to be dressed up. He did that famous ESPN commercial where he dressed up as like a rocker. You ever see that one? Did that make it to Canada?
No.
Yep. So anyway,
that's okay.
Guy knows his money though in football.
Okay, we'll eventually kick the American out of you.
Yeah, that's true. Real skill, by the way, Jeff, to go that deep on every team. Like he didn't know, he has no idea what questions are coming, and he's money on everything.
There's a reason he's a professor, and there's a reason that he's still, he knows everything.
Yeah,
and he's. in a lot of ways, there's a lot of ways he was an originator, a lot of the stuff you see. I'm going to actually ask you this, because we got a bit of time before we take a break. Dan Shulman joins us. Who was the first NFL insider? The first guy to break trades?
Will McDonough. Of the Boston Globe, who then became the first. Will McDonough was the first, like, sports writer to gain prominence on American television.
Okay.
And he was hired by NBC.
Wasn't he also famous for slugging Raymond Claiborne?
Yeah, Raymond Clayton came off to him Will McDonough was a tough Irish guy from Boston who popped him. By the way, father of Sean McDonough, for those of you who listen to college football, former Monday Night Football broadcaster. So Will McDonough was that guy, got hired by NBC, and became the first of the journalists who were used as television insiders. By the way, guys like Tom Verducci, Peter King, Bob McKenzie, name any of the people, including in either of these countries, Elliot Friedman, they all owe a debt to Will McDonough. That's the guy who started this in terms of convincing television people that you didn't have to just be a quote-unquote television person to be on television.
The Boston Globe, you know, the Boston Globe between Will McDonough and Peter Gammons, they made so many writers money. Extra money.
Yeah. And I would argue, as much as I don't particularly love the show, I'm not the biggest Pardon the Interruption fan, but Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon made people millions of dollars, given that how many times have people tried to essentially like duplicate that format in local markets?
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Dan Shulman had the call of the World Series on ESPN, which of course meant he had the call of the World Series on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's had a busy week, he's had a busy run. But Dan Shulman's agreed to join us. We'll have the voice of baseball, Dan Shulman. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360. Need a leg up in your picks? Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks, whether you want to get it on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between. Go to oddsshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right. Well, welcome back to Writer's Block.
There's like a funeral just in this studio because I may be doing the beer store.
No, I just let Brandeo pick the music today. So
Travis is probably.
I know it's Corey Hart. Anyhow, I actually know somebody who was in Corey Hart's band. Who was a former neighbor.
First of all, wore sunglasses at night. The font size on this by Travis is.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, he doesn't realize my eyes are fading.
Yeah. Anyhow, this is a first on this show. We'll be joined by Dan Shulman in a few minutes. But
here we go.
I'm tired of reading all the promotional stuff.
All of the hosts have way too much to do. Yeah. So I'm happy to earn some money.
Deitch is going to earn the promotion or read the promotional stuff. So fire
your
away.
Your team could be playing in a game called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup. If your team was nominated, this is your last week to hear. We announce your name.
That's bad grammar there, isn't it? By the way, this is the last week to hear if we announce your name.
If you haven't, I certainly did. If you haven't entered yet, you can still enter online for a chance to be the wild card team. Listen up here. Yeah. Jeff Davis from Omami?
Huh?
What was that, Travis? Omimi. Jeff
Omimi Omimi.
From Omimi nominated the team the Gravediggers, of whom he is also the captain. I like putting the C on yourself, Jeff. If you are on the team, the Gravediggers, you have 590 seconds to call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. To qualify for the voting round of this contest, find full details at sportsnet.ca/590. And when you're on the website, please subscribe to Writer's Block. How was that? Not bad, right?
That was very good. You're gonna do the next one.
Travis clapping. I got a clap from Travis.
And I did pick it because there's no way I was gonna pronounce Omimi right, or I wasn't gonna be able to do it without laughing.
Now, by the way, I will admit I don't know. Where is that? Do you know?
Omimi?
Yeah.
It's near UUU. I don't know. I have no idea where.
Maybe someone can give us the heads up on where that is.
Let's bring in Dan Shulman. I wonder if he knows where Omimi is. Do you know where Omimi is, Mr. Shulman?
I've never heard of Omimi, and I'm a bit of a little geography. Is that like a place? That's a place?
Is it what?
A place.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard of Omimi, and I like my geography, but I don't know where it is. Where is it?
Apparently it's in the Kawartha Lakes.
Oh.
And you know what?
Yeah, not a part of the world I'm from all that familiar with.
And you know what Omimi and Garrett Cole have in common? Neither of them pitched in Game 7. I'm sorry.
Good segue.
That's awful. That Garrett Cole, look, this is the most interesting World Series I can remember in that it went 7 games. They were all lopsided. Weird stuff happened. And then it, capping it all off, Garrett Cole wearing a Scott Boras hat and asking the Astros PR staff if he has to do the interviews now that he is a non-affiliated person.
I know.
Was he upset at not being used last night?
I can't speak to that. I didn't see him. I wasn't in the clubhouse after the game. So I believe he knew the plan because A.J. Hinch told us before the game that his plan was to use Cole if they were leading or maybe tied but not trailing. He said he wasn't going to chase a win was the phrase that he used with Garrett Cole. And you know, it's funny. It's Game 7 of the World Series, but and Cole is a free agent now, but, you know, A.J. Hinch will sit there and say, you know, I got to be careful. The guy's got a career. And Dave Martinez said the same thing about Strasburg. Like, I'll have a conversation with him, but he's been so healthy this year, I don't want to risk hurting him. And, you know, stuff they didn't used to think about is now top of mind for a lot of these guys. So I know a lot of people are jumping on A.J. Hinch, who I think is a great manager. I wasn't really all that surprised. I mean, I know from talking to him a lot about Greinke, like Greinke was magnificent last night, but I know he thinks better to get him out a little bit too early than a little bit too late. Then he went to Will Harris, who has been a very, very good and reliable reliever for him, and he gave up a homer. And then he went to Osuna, his closer, and he gave up a couple of runs. Like, just the guys he normally counted on didn't get the job done last night.
I just got to mention, by the way, Elizabeth Hart, imaging producer with us, says that Omimi is a small town off Highway 7 in between Peterborough and Lindsay. Its population is 36.
Wow. Oh, awesome.
There you go.
I've driven by Omimi, but I obviously it didn't leave much of an impression on me.
So if there's 36 people there, you got to figure there's at least 20 people in the damn hockey team. So we're getting almost half the town.
I'm glad those guys answer. That's pretty awesome. That I hope they call.
Yes, go ahead.
By the way, Dan Shulman, do you know that literally 10 minutes ago, Jeff Blair called you the voice of baseball?
I did not know that.
Thinking of Scully, Joe Buck.
Well,
who else is out there? Bob Costas. that's a very heady company, Dan.
Well, that's very kind of him. I mean, Jeff may be a little bit biased because we are friendly and we work together and we bump into each other and so forth. But I will tell you this, and I mean this in all sincerity, and I feel this every single October. You know, you get down to the World Series, and other than, you know, the local radio crews of whatever two teams happen to be there, there are three crews doing the game. There's Fox, which was Joe Buck and John Smoltz. There was MLBI, which, as you guys know, was Matt Vasgersian and Buck Martinez, of course. And then there was Chris Singleton and myself on ESPN Radio. And I feel lucky as hell to be there. Like, it's great. It's really cool to still be working. It's just like, I'm sure for a player, it's really cool to still be playing. As a broadcaster, it's really cool to still be working and to be able to do the World Series for the last, I guess, 9 years now or something like that. It's awesome. And you get nice texts. And the funny thing about radio is you get texts and you see on Twitter messages from people. Like, I was driving my son out to, you know, to drop him off at school or whatever they were doing. People who were in the car for hours. And, you know, as you guys know, like, if you lock in on a game when you're driving on radio, like, you're locked in, right? Yeah. And it's wonderful to hear that, you know, when people take the time to send a message or something that say, hey, you made my drive a little bit shorter or whatever the case may be.
What is going to be your sort of lingering memory or takeaway from this World Series, Dan, understanding so much happened?
I think it will be, on a team level, I think it will be the never-say-die attitude of the Nationals, who started 19-31, as you guys know, and then, you know, just kept getting better and better and better. We're trailing in the wild card game. We're trailing to the Dodgers in the division series. We're trailing 3-2 to the Astros, and just woke up every day and said, let's go 1-0 today, which was their mantra. Mm-hmm. Let's win a game today. Dave Martinez, you know, Dave Martinez experiencing a minor heart issue in September, getting a clean bill of health, being able to come back and manage, and managing this team to a World Series championship with relentless positivity, just unbelievable positivity about his players. Feeling happy for Max Scherzer, a guy who I think is great and competes like crazy, you know, not being able to pitch in Game 5, and then he gets to come back and being a part of Game 7. And I guess from a Blue Jay point of view, one of the real good guys in the game, Daniel Hudson, being out there for the ninth inning was really cool. I thought the Nationals were a really good story. I thought it was a great story for baseball that this team was able to battle and persevere and overcome and all that sort of stuff and pull off an upset and beat a great team, by winning four games on the road in the World Series.
Now, Richard and I talked about this a little bit at the start of the show, too, and you talked about Dave Martinez. I mean, I remember Dave Martinez when I was covering the Montreal Expos, came over in a trade, and, of course, he was with the Blue Jays as well at one point, but... I'm watching, it's not the basketball game, but I'm watching online, and I kept waiting for the shot of somebody warming up in the bullpen when Max Scherzer was scuffling. I didn't have the sound on because I'm at the basketball game. And I realized, when I get home and I'm doing the reading on it, I mean, that show of faith in a guy at a time where managers change pitchers almost according to the count is remarkable, Dan. I mean, that's one of those things a manager does that 5 years down the road, similar situation, we're going to be sitting there saying, man, remember when Davey Martinez stuck with Max Scherzer and he was all over the place?
Yeah, it really was, because he was all over the place. I mean, there was hard contact. They left the Astros left nine runners on in five innings against Max Scherzer. And it wasn't like he got a big strikeout to get the third out every inning. Like, even some of the third outs, fly ball to the warning track, line drive to center, something like that. And Chris Singleton and I talked about it on the air. I think in the third and the fourth and the fifth, we were shocked nobody was up. Like, not necessarily that Max was out, but if he's on the ropes, two batters later, it could be game over. Like, you got to have somebody up. And we were really surprised that he didn't. And it all turned out great. And whether he was trying to just show Max Scherzer that he had confidence in him or whether he really felt that he was doing fine, I don't know. The other aspect is, and it's really remarkable, they won a World Series really using six pitchers in October, basically, or really trusting six pitchers. And Strasburg was pretty much out of the mix. So they knew that going into the game, they only had five. And Doolittle and Hudson were for the last two innings. So that left them three, Scherzer, Corbin, Sanchez. And I think Dave Martinez, without really announcing it before the game, I think his plan was exactly what happened. Ride Scherzer for as long as you can. Hope he's healthy enough to go. And then I think he knew he wanted Corbin to get him to Doolittle and Hudson. And in the end, he didn't need Doolittle because things went well. But maybe he didn't even want to use Sanchez. I don't know. But I was kind of stunned. I thought by the fourth inning, for sure somebody would be up. And there were three or four times I thought Scherzer was one batter away from coming out of the game.
Wow. And Dan, I think you hit it on the head. I think people really just enjoyed this Nationals team, even if you weren't a Nationals fan. It's a great story. I do want to ask you about the Astros, because this is something Jeff and I were talking about a little earlier. Had the Astros completed this and won, I think you'd be talking about this 2019, Dan, in terms of, where do they rank historically? If you thought about the entire season, are they a top 25, top 30 team of all time? But when you don't win, you don't get the sort of the nod or the historical tag of being one of the great teams of all time. I know I'm asking you something that really can't be answered for a couple of years, but what do you think this loss ultimately means to this current Astros era?
I think it keeps us from using the D word, the dynasty word, because, two championships in 3 years and a lot coming back and an ALCS in the year in the middle, I think you can start saying, okay, well, where do they rank? But I agree with you. And maybe it's silly to have it, they are a dynasty if they win and they're not a dynasty if they lose a single baseball game. But that's how we judge. Like, one of the greatest teams I've ever seen was the 2001 Seattle Mariners, who won, if I'm not mistaken, 116 games, I believe.
Yep.
This Houston team won 107. Seattle won 116, but they didn't get to the World Series. They got knocked out of the ALCS, and now they're kind of like a footnote. Like, nobody talks about them. So I think this loss, Richard, I mean, they're still a great team, but I think it keeps them out of the historically great conversation, unless you know, if they get back there again next year and they win a World Series next year, you know, now I think you put them back in. Because, listen, in the American League, it's hard to do what they've done. You always have two or three superpowers in the American League, and they are a great, great team. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm not a big believer in team of destiny, but, you know, Washington just wouldn't take no for an answer. They were relentless. And truthfully, like, had Justin Verlander, you know, pitched like he did during the regular season, Houston wins the World Series. You don't want to pin it on one guy. He's 36 years old. He threw more pitches this year than any pitcher in baseball, which is crazy for a guy his age if you think about it. But, you know, he wasn't able to quite deliver, and Washington just, they just found a way. So, but I still think they're a great, great team, but I don't think you can put them like in the, you know, the top 8 or 10 cluster of great teams of all time when they've only got one World Series championship.
Dan, you know, I wasn't there, so I didn't get a chance to talk to Anthony Rendon at all. I think I've spoken to him a couple of times when the Nationals were here for interleague play. I don't know if you guys had a chance to spend any time with him, but I swear to God, does anything bother him? Like, does he even, I mean this with all due respect, does he like baseball? Because he doesn't appear to understand that he's supposed to be weighted down by pressure.
He's just the most laid-back cat you're ever going to see. It's unbelievable. He's everything that he does, on the field, on off the field, the way he handles the media, the way just he walks around the clubhouse and talks to other members of the team. He's just a laid-back, low heart rate kind of guy. And he's a great player. He's been the most underrated star in baseball for years. Him and Freddie Freeman are the two guys I always think about. Mm-hmm. And I think Freeman started to get a little more acclaim the last couple of years. Rendon is magnificent. You know, three hits and five RBIs in game six, and then the big home run that got him started again in game seven. He's a phenomenal player. He's every bit as good. He's right there, in my opinion, with Bellinger and Yelich and Mookie Betts. Like, he's on that level. He's also a free agent, and I don't know if they can keep him, to be honest with you. So I think it's going to be hard for them to keep him. You know, maybe Josh Donaldson slides in there as plan B if Rendon goes to the Dodgers or something like that. There are all kinds of rumors about the Dodgers really wanting Rendon, and of course, why wouldn't they? But you're right. Whether he's, you know, doing well or doing poorly or in public or in private, it looks like his heart rate's like 48, and it never changes. And God bless him, he'll probably live to be 120.
And probably drinking bourbon in his final days, my understanding. Danny, thanks so much for doing this, man. Again, yeah, you know I mean it when I say terrific work all year long, terrific work through the postseason. And the good news is college hoops is just around the corner. So there you go.
Yeah, as in my first games are Tuesday, so it's time to flip the page.
Absolutely. Dan, thanks for doing this, man. Terrific stuff as always.
Great work, Dan.
Right,
thank
guys,
you.
Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. It's the great Dan Shulman, World Series play-by-play voice on ESPN Radio.
In all seriousness, Jeff, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step in.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that he really is an exceptional radio broadcaster. And ESPN Radio, between Boog Shambi, Dan Shulman, they have some great play-by-play people.
Yeah. And I really, the guy doesn't get talked about an awful lot, but I've heard them an awful lot, and Chris Singleton is really, really good.
I didn't mean to short trip, but
I'm saying,
the analysts are great too.
Yeah.
I mean, unquestionably, ESPN Radio's radio broadcast is much better than the television grouping, in my opinion, of Vasgersian, A-Rod, and Jessica Mendoza. It's not even close, actually.
I'm with you 100% on that. We will take a break. Maybe I'll have another read for you when we come back.
Sweet.
Travis, do we have another read that Dice can do, right? Can he do the Air Canada thing when we come back? All right, good. Well, I'm enjoying this. Richard Deitch is going to read another. No. What's your email and Omimi? Turn the microphones on, because Travis, I don't want to. Apparently, somebody on Twitter told me that everybody in Omimi is left-handed and they all curl. Like, please.
Okay, biggest Omimi fact. A number of listeners called in hometown of Neil Young.
Yeah.
But
that's not true. Everybody knows Neil Young's from Winnipeg.
Well, can we
Neil Young went to Calvin High, so I could show you the house he lived in. We could go right now. We'd have to catch a plane.
Where was he born?
I don't know. Was he born in Omimi?
So that would be
would be his hometown. But yeah. I'm sorry. I will fight to the death. Winnipeg is laying, God help us, we don't own him much. We're laying claim to Neil Young. He's born in Toronto.
Toronto.
But see, now Brandeo's Derek Brandeo just said he's like Canada's Tupac. Everybody wants to take credit for him. Right. Neil Young's from Winnipeg. Everybody knows it. Anyhow, we'll come back. Richard Deitch is going to read from a sheet of paper. You don't want to miss that. It's Writer's Block on 590 and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block. We got a lot to talk about, but first, Mr. Deitch has a message.
How would you like to fly on board the Air Canada fan flight to see the Leafs play in Florida in January? Listen for Air Canada's ideal sporting destinations for your chance to win. Your next destination is Calgary. Collect at least five of the destinations and then listen for
Can
your...
Can you say that again the way you said it?
Calgary?
No. Just say it again. It was nice. It was Calgary.
Calgary.
No, it was Calgary.
Calgary. Collect at least five of the destinations and then listen for your cue to call on Friday the 8th for your chance to win. This contest is open to Ontario residents only. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590, where you can also subscribe to Writer's Block.
Yes, you can.
Oh, that the other good. Read was better.
No, this one was really
good. You like
good. That? Yeah, well, right. this one was in English. So. I'm wow. just kidding. I'm just kidding. Travis is the... Did you write this? Oh, you didn't? So I'm insulting somebody else?
Oh, Jesus. Marchese?
No.
That was a party.
Oh, you edited it, so it's your fault. Thank God. So we got a writer's block poll right now, which I've retweeted, to settle this argument once and for all. And we're asking the question, today's writer's block poll, where is Neil Young from? And this is not, don't go looking online saying, well, it says Omimi, he's from Omimi. Where do you think in his heart Neil Young would say he's from? I think that's the correct way to approach it. So far, we've got 18 votes, but it's early, as Mike Wilner would say. 50%.
Omimi's really
Omimi's got 50%. Yeah. Toronto's got 28. Neil Young has never, ever said he's from Toronto. He just never has. He's way too cool for that. 22% from Winnipeg, which is, of course, where Neil Young is from. So anyhow, we have tweeted out the poll. Answer it. And at the end of the show, we'll give out the results, unless it's Omimi, in which case we'll just forget we even have ever asked the poll. So there you go. Oh, the votes are coming in now.
Votes are flying in?
Yeah, some of the Winnipeggers are following me. They're weighing in here now. Yeah. We're not going to take this lying down, Omimi. You may think you have our pushed up against the wall, Omimi, but you don't.
I love the fact that the Omimi has 30, population 30. It's just cool. 36.
I think it's pretty nifty.
Yeah, very cool.
What do we have coming up? We don't have another read because you've we do have another read, but I'm going to do this one because it's an easy one.
It's an easy one.
Yes, Tom Lavero, sports columnist of the Washington Times. My friend Lovey's going to join us. And
can I just say, Jeff, really quick, yes. that
Ren Lavoie, 4 o'clock.
And you appreciate this as a longtime baseball writer.
Hopefully.
There have been some fantastic pieces out of that World Series from, I mean, just an endless amount of talented people at the Washington Post to, you know, Jeff Passan, Verducci,
Sports
Illustrated.
Are you lobbying for a job everywhere?
No, I'm just saying, to the Athletic. It's just, baseball is one of those.
You had to name drop them, didn't you?
Again, baseball is just, and everybody at Sportsnet, there you go. Baseball is just one of those.
I like the way you add everybody at Sportsnet, there you go.
Baseball is just one of those sports which produces really good writing. Boxing, yes. Baseball, a couple sports that just, it's always, it really produces the best when it comes to pros. You agree? Baseball's good for that.
Yeah, I'm
I think it's hard to be a great basketball. I think basketball.
We've had this discussion. Yeah. I think basketball right now, the
best it's ever been.
Well, the blogosphere in basketball is just
phenomenal. I agree.
Completely off the charts. Like there are in this city alone, there are so many sharp young people.
Right.
Writing basketball.
Different kind of writing,
and
though, right?
Talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I tip my hat. They're amazing. And a guy like Michael Grange is incredible. But historically, baseball is a really great writer sport.
Yeah. What's one sport you could basically drink while you were writing it?
So it's always a good sport.
Great road trips.
I think hockey's a tough sport to write. feature-wise.
Baseball, baseball, and Marriott points. Baseball goes together. Baseball and writing go together like baseball coverage and Marriott points.
Pretty much.
Ren Lavoie is our NHL insider with Tavia Sports. He'll join us at 4 o'clock. Tom Lavero, sports columnist of the Washington Times. He'll be along. I'll find something else for Deitch to do. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360. All right, so our poll about Neil Young is has taken off. I decided to check our text line as well. 590 590. and it appears as if folks in Omimi are up in arms. It's 1260 is the population, not 36. Some guy says, go listen to Helpless. Neil Young is from Northern Ontario. There is a town in North Ontario. All my changes were there. That's from Dave and Lindsay. And that is true. Helpless, helpless, helpless. But this might be the text slash tweet of the day. Ian in Fergus, Ontario, says he's from both. Parents split when he was young, and he spent idyllic summers in Omimi and hellish, endless winters in Winnipeg. So there you go. I think that might be the final word. That might be the final. Ian, well done. That might be the final word on it. Hellish, endless winters in Winnipeg. You have just summed up my hometown. Thank you. That's really well done.
Good text.
Speaking of winter, I'm going to bring in Ren Lavoie. He's our NHL insider with Tavia Sports. Ren, is it true that Montreal's canceled Halloween? You can't cancel Halloween.
This is a big debate. This is totally crazy. The weather is awful here right now. And they're not canceling Halloween. They're pushing it back to tomorrow.
But how can you? You don't push Christmas back till the 26th.
You know what? It's as big as a debate. If not bigger than, is Carey Price going to play tonight?
Okay. Well, all right.
So this is a big, big, big issue. But you know what, Jeff? You lived in Montreal. You know pretty well the province. Your family knows pretty well the province. You're not surprised.
Actually, no. That's a very good point. I'm not. I'm not surprised.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
You can't be surprised. But I've heard that Christmas is still going to be on the 25th. Of December. They're not going to change the date.
So, thank God.
Ren, I have to ask this question. What happens if there are kids tonight who go to houses? Like, will they be denied candy by the populace?
First of all, if you're outside right now, you're a brave man, a brave kid, you're going to get all the candies that you want. Because, honestly, the weather is really, really bad. It's not dangerous, though. It's just like it's pouring down. And the kids are going to get their candies. And you know what? If they're smart, they're going to go back tomorrow.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice.
Oh, absolutely.
But I've heard some parents saying, you know what? To teach a lesson to our kids, we're going to take 50% of all their candies tonight just to make sure that they'll know what it is to live in Quebec. And all the taxes that we're paying, 50% of your salary at minimum will be gone.
Oh, nice. God.
So candies is going to be the same thing. Well, it's wonderful.
That's tremendous.
Well, first of all, Ren, I could tell you that if any kid who goes out tonight in Montreal to trick-or-treat, Mike Babcock will not allow him on the back-to-back.
Hey, Mike is responsible of a lot of things, but I'm not sure that he's responsible of that one.
Oh, yeah, we're blaming him for that anyhow. Hey, Ren, you're out and about, and I don't want to turn this all into the Toronto Maple Leafs, but
no.
What are people saying about the Maple Leafs? You know, the thing that I've noticed, they did some really stupid, tactical things against Washington. I guess Mike Babcock thinks Mitch Marner taking a defensive zone faceoff is a good idea. But the main thing, Randy, you watch these guys play, they're not having any fun. Like, they aren't.
Well, you know what? I think, Jeff, a year ago, the debate, we said exactly the same thing.
Yes.
I'm not kidding. We said that a year ago. And it's a problem because when training camp is there, you see all the players being energized, happy to be there. But after a month in, you know exactly who you are, what's going on inside the dressing room, the relationship with the coaches. And I say the coaches because there's been a lot of changes behind that bench, right?
Fair. Yep.
Okay, so let's be honest here. You know, one thing that I know is this, and it's not a surprise for anybody, but the Maple Leafs are not playing up to par. They're not playing at the level that they're supposed to, okay? Everybody in the Toronto Maple Leafs organization knows that. Everybody is kind of, I'm not going to use disappointed by it, but, you know, you just see how Anderson, the goaltender, reacted last game versus Washington, and I'm not even talking about the winning goal here. Just his demeanor was not really positive, and that needs to change. For me, the goaltender is a leader on the ice, needs to show everybody that he is not only on top of his game, but he confidence level is really high. He needs to show that to the rest of his teammates. It starts there in a way, and after that, you need to win games. And you know, when you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, the way they played the last game, obviously you can look at it and being negative, but there was a lot of positive signs. I mean, Austin Matthews played really well again. It's a grind. It's not easy, but they're not the only one. Believe me, they're not the only one playing that way in the league. I talked to a few teams today, a few members, Western Conference or Eastern Conference. There's a lot of people upset right now with the way their team is playing. That's the reality of it, okay? And so we'll see how it's going to turn out. I mean, this is probably the only person in the world who's really happy right now is Gary Bettman because he knows that what he wanted is in front of him right now. The Sabres are one of the best teams in the East, the Hurricanes. Tampa's struggling. Toronto is struggling a little. Montreal is playing well. So night after night, it's a grind. And that's exactly what he wanted. There's a lot of coaches upset, a lot of people upset. In San Jose, they're upset. So it's obviously we can look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and say, you know what, they're supposed to be better, but they're not the only one. So the answer to your question is this. Everybody is looking at Toronto, okay, no doubt about it. But people in the league, there are so many teams struggling that they need to take care, first of all, of their own issues before taking care of other people's issues. And that's for me. The reality of this league, I've seen scouts in games like I've never seen before. You feel like everybody needs to be on top. And so we'll see how it's going to turn out. Obviously, at this time of the year, there's not a lot of trades. But maybe somebody will panic at one point. There was a lot of rumbling about the Sharks, what they're going to do with Peter DeBoer, what's going on there. Are the players really playing for him? And there are so many question marks around the league that sometimes some teams just want to make a trade to help their coaches. So we'll see if some teams are going to pull the trigger in the next few days. It's possible.
Ren, one team that is not struggling is the Boston Bruins. They have looked fantastic. From your perspective, why is that working as well as it is?
Leadership. Guys, you know what? I have known Patrice Bergeron since a long time, since he played that preseason game in Montreal with his equipment, junior equipment. He was supposed to go back in the queue, and he scored the winning goal that night in Montreal at the Bell Center. And the coaches and the GM said, no, you're not going anywhere. You're flying back with us to Boston. So, and I'm telling you, okay, I've never seen Patrice being so upset about losing a Stanley Cup. It's the second time the first time he lost that Stanley Cup was versus the Blackhawks, and they knew that, you know what, the Blackhawks were for real. And I'm not saying that Patrice is saying or the Boston Bruins are saying that the St. Louis Blues are not for real. But in a way, nobody expected to see the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup last season. And it's been with him since then. And if Patrice is feeling that way, that means that Brad Marchand is feeling that way. That means that Dan O'Shara is feeling that way. That means the coaching staff is feeling that way. It's leadership. For me, that's what it is. It's a little bit, if I can compare it, it's a little bit like the Lightning when they lost in seven versus the Capitals. So that was 18 months ago. And losing in seven, third round, they thought that they will be the one winning the Stanley Cup. And the way they started last year, they played so well all season long. I feel exactly the same vibe right now with the Boston Bruins. Those guys are really upset. And they want to win badly, so that's the only reason why you can obviously talk about the first line, but it's not only the first line. Torrey Krug is playing big time hockey. There's a lot of really good players right now. They're sacrificing. You know the way they played versus the Sharks. I mean, it was a clinic the last game they played, and it was great to watch for the Boston Bruins fans, and obviously a tough one for the Sharks.
Ren, is what the Edmonton Oilers are doing now, is this sustainable? Because it sure feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels like it, you know. And why not, you know, when they got James Neal, and I remember saying to the Oilers, well, that's a good trade. And they looked at, well, we don't know. We're not sure, you know. We're hoping it's going to work. And I'm like, why? You're hoping it's going to work? I mean, for sure it's going to, yeah, but he was struggling in Calgary. Yeah, he played in the last two Stanley Cup final and was injured last season. How do you want to produce when you're injured? You're going to score a number of goals, but, I mean, if you're not Ovechkin or all these superstars, you're going to struggle. It's exactly what happened here. They thought that they let go a guy that will be really good in the playoffs. But first of all, you need to go in the playoffs before talking about the playoffs. And you know what? I look at the way James Neal played last night, the goal that he scored. First thing he did is to salute, obviously, all his teammates and go salute the goaltender because he made a great play right there. So that's leadership, too. I really think that they made a great move. I do believe that it's not – they still need some help. Defensively, that's been an issue for a long time, but they're going in the right direction. That team is going to win the Stanley Cup at one point. Is it going to be this year? Probably not, but they're going to win a Stanley Cup with that group. I have no doubt in my mind.
Big statement there. Ren, what for you is the most disappointing team in the NHL this year and why?
I have to go back to the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I know I'm always talking about the same team. I feel like it, but even last night, the way they play, I know it was two games in two nights. There was tons of injuries. They showed a lot of character maybe by winning that game in overtime. They were losing 5-3, but I don't feel the same vibe. I'm not confident of when I'm looking at that team playing. Their superstars are not playing like superstars. So I don't know. For me, you know, that's a disappointment. Obviously, the San Jose Sharks in the Western Conference. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. Honestly, like you can lose games, but not the way they're losing games right now. The way they played Sunday in Ottawa was shameful. So you expect that they're going to rebound. Well, probably the last game of Joel Thornton in Boston, probably, and they got whacked. No energy except in the third period, but I mean this is painful to watch too, because that's the team that was playing in the third round in the playoffs, and people are going to say they're tired. Everybody's tired. I mean, the Boston Bruins are tired. They play more games. You're going to say that maybe they're older, but I do believe it's more than that. I do believe that there's a problem. Players are not responding the right way. I think Peter DeBoer, the way he responded to a question in Ottawa, about Erik Karlsson being a minus with the Sharks in the, you know, in the building in Ottawa, saying that it's not the only building when he's where he's a minus. That's not protecting one of your best players.
No.
So I don't know what's going on there, but if Mike Babcock, Claude Julien would have said something like that, oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe what will be the reaction the next day.
Ren, another team that I think a lot of people, I don't know if I would say they're surprised, but I mean, I certainly expected to see more from them, and again, yeah, there's a chance they could make a move here, but the New Jersey Devils, and I mean, Corey Schneider was just, what was it, 7 goals and 23 shots or something like that? They were just horrible. Yeah. They looked awful last night. What's going on there? Because that's a way better team than that, Ren. Or are they?
They're supposed to, honestly, Jeff. Let's be honest here. They're supposed to be a better team.
Yeah, they're 2-5-3.
And I was saying that there's a lot of teams being upset today. That there's a lot of teams, and the New Jersey Devils probably are on top. When you hear players like PK Subban after last night's game saying, I played a really bad game, I need to be better, well, there's a problem here. Taylor Hall saying that the crowd is all over the Devils, upset, you know, and booing. You know what? They're booing, and I'm okay with it, because that means they care. Yep. They care. And to see the New Jersey Devils fans booing is something.
Yeah.
It means something. It's not your typical sometimes Toronto crowd, Montreal crowd. They're not winning the Stanley Cup year after year. They're not good enough. This is a different vibe in New York. The New Jersey Devils are not supposed to be. They're not the Yankees. They're not the Mets. They're not the Giants or the Jets, you know. Mm-hmm. But the fans, they do care, okay? Yeah. And hopefully they're going to respond, because there is some rumors right now that they're looking for another goaltender. They don't have they have two goalies, but they don't have a third one in case of an injury. So maybe they're looking around the league. We'll see how it's going to turn out. But something needs to happen. They made some moves behind the bench. I don't think that's the problem here. I think it's the general way the team is playing, honestly. And what's really sad is their goaltenders, but during the preseason games, Corey Schneider was just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was great. But there's a big difference between preseason games and the regular season game. It's 5-3 in third period last night. You should win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You should win that game. You have a tired team in front of you. Their best defenseman's not there, not playing. You need to be better than that. They weren't, and there's a lot of people upset there.
Ren, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this. Thanks, man.
Have a good day and a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks, Ren.
Ren LaVar, NHL insider with Tavia Sports. And, the New Jersey Devils are a team. I thought they were going to be so much. I had them down as a bit of a dark horse team. I loved some of the moves they made in the offseason.
Number one pick. I mean, they have a lot of talent. They're not playing well, but they're...
No.
I have... if Taylor Hall comes back, I still like the future of that group.
Well, Ren's point about the New Jersey Devils fans are true believers.
They've had a lot of success.
Had a lot of success, but they're also true believers.
I agree.
They're kind of the... They're one of the New York teams that goes about their business very efficiently, and all the sports they
good,
go about their business
good
very efficiently.
Fan base,
good hockey fan base, exactly. And as Ren said, if they're booing you,
you just probably deserve it.
You probably deserve it.
Yeah, I agree.
We appreciate Ren joining. You didn't know that, but they canceled. I heard that. In the
I read
news
that they
were canceling Halloween.
Yeah, what I didn't. What
holiday would you cancel if you could?
Hmm.
What holiday would you cancel if you could?
Let me think about that.
Travis, that's a poll question. What holiday would you cancel if you could?
Well, I love holidays just because, like, if you get the day off, I wouldn't cancel any of them. What? Christmas? What is wrong with you? Why would you do that?
Christmas.
No. You know what I would cancel? I would cancel Valentine's Day because it's an absolute scam. The notion, obviously, of giving somebody you love something is great, but it's a total commercial play.
Unlike Christmas.
Well, it's a little different. There's religious sort of connotations to Christmas. It's a total commercial play to try to basically gouge your pocket out of
romance.
Of money.
Romance clearly dead. Clearly dead in the Deitch household.
No, it's not. But here's the deal.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm going to give my wife a Valentine's Day gift. But the larger point is, like, there's so much of this stuff, whether it's like engagement, wedding rings, Valentine's Day, and even beyond that, weddings.
Now you're complaining about weddings?
Here's my point, Jeff. Just hold on. How ridiculous is it that
my wife makes rings?
How ridiculous is it that people will spend up to hundreds of thousands of dollars or $50,000 on a wedding? And I think it's because we get indoctrinated into, like, the wedding has to be the greatest day of your life. It has to be this at this big event. It's nonsense. Imagine taking that money and investing it in, like, something worthy.
You're the Grinch.
I got married at a bookstore. One of the few smart, and by the way, it's all my wife. One of the few smart decisions I ever made.
But you see, but that's a real hipster thing. You guys must have been Brooklyn hipsters, right? Yeah, you were. Come on, you were Brooklyn hipsters.
I was more
hipsters.
Of a hipster when I was younger. I'm not sure. Trust me, I've met some real hipsters. They're eating like organic granola in the street.
Come on, bookstore, that's a hipster.
And skateboarding to work because you can't take a car.
That's a hipster thing to do,
so
Deitch.
Much. You know what? Like, if you go back into the diamond, hopefully they're not sponsors of the show.
But
you go back into the diamond industry and stuff, it's a big marketing scam. It was a scam, basically, to convince people that
diamonds are a girl's best friend. They've written songs about diamonds being a girl's best friend.
Nonsense. You know what? It's nonsense. Don't buy into the mythology of homemade holidays. So, yeah, my answer is I would knock Valentine's Day out of the calendar.
And weddings.
No, I got no problem with people getting married. I think it's great, but spending like $500,000 on a wedding or $50,000 on a wedding is insane. It is economically insane to put yourself in debt for a one-day event. It makes no sense. None. Travis, you with me on this?
No, Travis probably
had a big wedding.
Yeah, it was a great wedding. God, I got shickered at your wedding, didn't I? I drank way too much. Yeah, it was a great wedding.
Is anybody with me on this in the studio about overpaying for weddings?
No.
Total price gouge. Yeah.
Travis thinks funerals are a scam.
He's right about that, too.
You guys, you're need all them. Going I mean, to
you,
hell.
You need them.
All of you are going to hell.
Functionally, you need them, but, like, that's a scam, too. That's an overpriced scam.
You are all going. You're going to hell for that. And
no,
you,
I'm not.
And you don't like.
Going to heaven.
And you don't like love. Like, how can you slag Valentine's Day?
Listen, I am a major fan of love. And love whoever you want. I don't care if you love. Who you love, I am happy.
Just don't give up.
All of us should find love, whoever it is. It's one of the hardest things to find. But Valentine's Day is an absolute scam.
More of a scam than Halloween?
Halloween is fantastic.
But Halloween's not a holiday either.
No, Thanksgiving's
the best holiday in the planet. Thanksgiving's the best. That's the best holiday ever.
It's great.
Thanksgiving is the best. That is the best.
Having moved to Toronto.
You get two of them.
I get two of them, which is fantastic. But Valentine's Day is an absolute scam.
Anyhow.
Don't ruin the mood there, Brendale.
Oh, yeah. Mr. I hate weddings. Mr. I don't like Valentine's Day. Don't ruin the mood.
Well, Brendale made a really good historical point, so he just threw me for a loop there.
Tom Lavero won't ruin the move.
No.
Ruin the mood.
Let's ask him if he likes Valentine's Day.
I know Lovey. His nickname is Lovey. Lovey loves him some Valentine's Day.
Probably just cost us a lot of ads in February.
He probably did. Tom Lavero, sports columnist of the Washington Times, joins us. The Valentine's Day special edition of Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Montreal music, Gino Vannelli. I just want to stop and tell you how I feel about you, babe. Those nights in Montreal.
Do you want to know one? I'll give you a hint ahead of time. I'm almost sure I'm going to pick this, although I reserve the right to change.
Yeah.
But I might go with like a Christopher Cross kind of sailing or something like that to really bother people.
That would do it. That would be.
I feel like that's kind of annoying, right?
You have to turn in your man card if you do that.
Yeah. I'm not sure it would fit, though. I don't really like the song.
You're going to be telling me you're going to go buy a van or something.
I feel like the Bee Gees could fit into this.
Just read. Do your read.
You can win a $200 Sportsnet Grill gift card every week with Sportsnet Grill's Secret Seats.
That's a tough one, eh? It sneaks up in your Sportsnet grill secret seats.
The only way to win is to subscribe to the weekly Sportsnet Nation newsletter. Mm-hmm. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 to sign up. This contest is open to Ontario residents only. Jeff, should we mention, and I will see to you, that we had a major baking contest in the newsroom
today. Oh, yes, we did. And what were the results? We had Alex Sixero, of course, as we refer to him, the smarter of the Sixero brothers. He made...
cheesecake.
Yeah, he made pumpkin cheesecake, which I thought was a little too much sodium for my liking.
I thought it was really
and,
good.
And Maria St. Aubin, who essentially runs the damn place.
Right.
She's very in charge smart. Of everything. Very smart, smart woman. We'll all be working for her in another couple of years. She made, as only Maria would, it had, what was it again, Travis? Explain to me, because there were a lot of ingredients.
It was a pumpkin spice blondie with cream cheese dressing, or cream cheese icing, I believe.
Okay. And so, and what happens is, I mean, they've done this bake-off for a couple of years now. And we vote on it. What was the final result?
I happen to know it's 12-10 for Maria.
Maria?
Yes. But I will say
so
that
beat Alex Sixero,
the latest,
well
the breaking news, basically, from the newsroom is that Alex is protesting the vote.
Why?
I think he's claiming there might be some irregularities in the voting process.
Jesus.
I'm not saying, like, Russian interference or anything like that, but it's unclear if one of the... There might be a swing vote in there in question.
Well, that's a great segue because we're going to Washington, D.C. to talk to Tom Lavaro, sports columnist with the Washington Times. Lovey, are you in D.C. or are you still in Houston?
No, I got out of Houston early this morning.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
Absolutely.
Attaboy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jeff. It's good to hear your voice, buddy.
Yeah, I miss you, man. I miss the cigars. I miss the drinking. I miss the... Anyhow, I miss it. What's Washington like? What's Washington like now that you've won a World Series?
Well, you know what? It's like a city that has all of a sudden discovered baseball. You know, this wasn't a great year for the Nationals at the box office or on local TV. I mean, they barely got over 2.1 million fans, and the TV ratings were down and less than the Orioles, who only won 48 games this year. So this was a shot in the arm that the franchise needed, because winning the division titles in the early exits had gotten old for this fan base that still really is still learning how to appreciate baseball fully after not having it for 33 years.
Mm. I think one of the things that's really, really fascinating after a team wins a championship is what kind of impact it has on the marketplace. And we're getting a sense of that here in Toronto, obviously, with the Raptors, and other places have experienced this as well. What do you think this means for Nationals fandom heading forward? And is it your sense that this group may be able to bring in more baseball fans into the market?
Oh, I think they will. I think it'll have a huge impact going into attendance and ticket sales, sponsorships next season. Because, for one thing, you know, the big dog in town, the Redskins, are on life support.
Right.
So the competition for all that is really weak at this point. It's still NFL football, so they have a safe built-in safety net. But it's like people are falling over themselves locally, at least fans are, not to be associated with the Redskins and want to be associated with something that's winning, that they can feel good about. And right now, you know, the Nationals and the Capitals are both those teams that have done that. So I think it's going to have a big impact. I don't have a lot of faith in Nationals management having the ability to get the most out of it. Mm. They're a little bit weak when it comes to marketing and promotion.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Tom, because, you know, I was going to say, when you said Nationals management, I it caught me for a minute, because I was about to say, in terms of baseball management, I look at what, you know, look, they've made their mistakes. But, man, I'll tell you what, Mike Rizzo this year, at least he seemed to have the courage of his convictions. And so did Dave Martinez.
I mean, the two of them together, look, Mike, they haven't had a losing season since 2011.
Right.
I think they have the third most wins in baseball. behind the Dodgers, and I forget who else. So, I mean, what Mike has built here is something that I don't think you'll ever see the Washington Nationals, as long as Rizzo is here, have a complete, you know, breakup, build down, and then tear it up, you know, build it back up again. They want to compete while restocking, and he's been able to do that. So as long as Mike is here, I think you'll see, always see the team competitive. Dave Martinez, you know, look, I think the job of managing a baseball team, 75% of it is managing the clubhouse. And he was unbelievable when they were 19-31. And the players, what they look for in a manager, you know this, Jeff, is consistency and truth. Don't all of a sudden flip out on me after you were my friend, you know, all this time. And Dave Martinez didn't do that. He never wavered from you know, a positive note, a positive mention of these guys, publicly or privately. The first day he took over in spring training, he gave his coaches a speech. He said, "We're not going to deal in any kind of negative talk with these guys. If somebody's not doing something right, we're going to fix it and get them to do it right." And that message resonated with a veteran group who, when they were 12 games under 500. And I think it's part of the reason that they had the confidence that they did in games like the seventh game of the World Series. Mm. You know, when they're down all of a sudden, and then, you know, come the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, those are their innings for the Nationals.
Tom, having covered this team all year, after losing three games at home, I think conventional wisdom, and I think people who probably don't see the Nationals every day, thought that this series is over. It's going to go back to Houston. Verlander's on the mound. Astros, one of the dominant teams in the last 20 years, lights out. Why wasn't that the case?
Well, you know, I think they get any, you know, it's really hard because, you know, I know there's a lot of statistics and analytics these days that qualify what happens in baseball. But this was an emotional team. I mean, they're a very talented team. A lot of people picked them to, you know, to be very good this year, and to some of them picked them to get to the World Series. But this is a team that actually runs on emotion a lot. And it's unusual for this Nationals team. This is the best Nationals clubhouse I've been around. Mm. And the other clubhouses in the past weren't bad, but they were missing a certain kind of mental toughness about them. I mean, they folded so quick under difficult circumstances, and they had a reputation as being soft around baseball. That changed this year. This was the closest team that Mike Rizzo has assembled to his own personality. You know, a toughness, a resilience, and the fact that they never pointed fingers and got down on themselves, yeah, I think contributed to all that. And as far as, you know, I think that's what contributed to their comebacks in game 6 and 7. They had, you know, they had Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer going out there. That gave them tremendous confidence, even when Scherzer struggled like he did last night.
Tom, was the Bryce Harper situation an example of addition by subtraction? And, I mean, I'll ask you this point blank. I wasn't around the clubhouse. I don't know how much of an issue he really was. But did Bryce Harper not being there make it a better clubhouse and by extension maybe put this team in a better position to do what it did?
You know, I want to be fair to Bryce Harper. He was a good teammate, you know, but he was an exhausting teammate. There was so much around Bryce in the clubhouse that it just seemed to suck some of the life out of the room sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, I mean, the whole Bryce Harper phenomenon is that's what, you know, he fed into. It wasn't that anyone didn't like Bryce. It was just, it was just Bryce and sometimes 24 other guys. And with his absence and with the addition of Juan Soto and Victor Robles, two young players with tremendous talent and enthusiasm, and the whole Latin connection in this clubhouse with Anibal Sanchez and Geraldo Parra went a long way to injecting a lot of enthusiasm and relaxing the clubhouse. And there was always a little bit of tenseness with Bryce around. And again, I don't fault him for it. It just comes with the package.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, how much of this team can they keep together for next year?
Well, that's the question that nobody wants to answer right now. Everyone wants to bask in the glow of the World Series and not confront the fact that Anthony Rendon, who was one of the stars in the series, is going to get paid and become a free agent and might not get paid here. Steven Strasburg, he can opt out of his contract. I suspect they'll renegotiate that because Strasburg moved his whole family to Washington last year, and he really likes it. So I don't see him leaving. The big question is Rendon, and he only upped his value in the postseason. And, you know, Scott Boras is his client, is his agent, and all Boras has to do is just get one owner. Just get one owner willing to say, you know, this is the guy who will change your team. Maybe it's the Texas Rangers. They're opening a new ballpark next year, something like that. And the learners have been reluctant into, you know, the owners of the Nats have been reluctant to really make an offer you can't refuse kind of move.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Lovey, thanks for doing this, man. Good to talk to you again. Be well.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care. Tom Lavero is a sports columnist with the Washington Times, and he's just, again, we talked about baseball writers, but he's a really good writer. He's actually more of a chronicler than a writer. Mm. He's a bon vivant, as we would say as well.
The one thing I just wanted to sort of just briefly comment on, because I thought it was a really interesting comment he made, that Bryce Harper was exhausting.
Yeah, as a I thought teammate. That was great.
And, you know, there are a lot of players who fit that tag when they are all-star caliber,
mm-hmm.
they are great, but the center of everything surrounds them to the point where they almost suck up too much oxygen to an organization. And if you haven't won, then maybe a lot of times it is addition by subtraction.
I mean, I can think of a name. I can think of Marcus Stroman as being that type of guy.
Yeah, a little lesser accomplished than Bryce statistically, but I think there's probably some truth to that.
Exhausting. Yeah. Josh Donaldson, a bit of an exhausting teammate in a different way.
Antonio Brown. Travis says, different position, but yes, I think there's truth. The one thing is the Steelers did win, I think, once with him. But, you know, there are athletes who sort of represent that exhaustion tag.
Yep.
And
that doesn't mean, I just want to say this, because
Tom did a good
it
job
doesn't
of
mean
not,
they're bad people.
Correct. Or that I actually they're don't think Bryce is a bad person at all.
No, but there's a drama that
part of that, by the way, you'd agree, part of that is the media creating that too. That's not Bryce Harper necessarily creating the exhaustion. There's an infinite demand for information about Bryce Harper, but it was really interesting to hear from somebody who covered the Nationals this year about the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And after hearing that, it reveals, I think, something about why they did come back in Game 6 and Game 7 and that how it was a different group.
Yeah. No, that is really well said. Just Dave Kaufman.
Montrealer. Yeah.
Longtime Expos. He's kind of your go-to if you're quoting an Expos fan about anything. I don't know if you've, those of you are aware that there's much talk in Quebec these days about a new values test they're going to give new citizens. Dave Kaufman on Twitter. If you celebrated the Nationals World Series win, you've automatically failed the new Quebec values test. Anyhow, nicely played, Mr. Kaufman. We'll take a break and be back with more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
She packed my bags. Last night, pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm going to be... Hi.
I got to jump in here because the TV folk is annoying me this morning. This is William Shatner from Montreal singing, "Wanna be high, so high." Well, no, well,
the earth.
Reciting spoken word.
Shatner. I miss my wife.
I honestly could listen to him all day.
Lonely.
What? You were looking at me like I'm insane.
Well, you are.
No, fantastic. Fantastic
first,
and campy.
First you want to get
so
rid of
great.
Love.
So campy, but so fantastic.
I'm apologizing, by the way.
Trying to think of the Shatner song.
I have a caramel milk in my mouth.
Shatner did a remake of something like 5-6 years ago that actually hit the charts and did really well. Do you guys happen to remember in the back there? Common People.
Common People, yeah.
Actually, that is a great remake of Common People, which is a great song, by the way. I will definitely put that on my top six if I can do that.
Anyhow.
Common People is a great song. You agree the original, too.
Yeah. I would agree. It's good. I would not consider William Shatner. There's no way. Well, maybe you would.
I love Shatner. By the way, I never told
you. Maybe you would drive down the road with the windows rolled down and William Shatner cranked
no,
up.
No, but you got to have the appropriate driving music. I'll tell you something else. Another band I haven't told you, like Susie and the Banshees. Fantastic.
But see, but that's not guilty pleasure.
No, that's a great band.
She's a horrible tipper, by the way.
You know Susie Sue?
It's amazing the stuff that I know.
Is she a Winnipegger?
No. I happened to go, true story, happened to be on a road trip to Philadelphia.
Right.
And we're at, not the Casbah, Khyber Pass is the name of the bar. Oh, we used to go to all
love
the time.
That name for a bar.
It's a great bar. I got thrown out one time. It wasn't my fault. But anyhow, so we're in there, and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and Susie Sue had just come through town. We're talking to a bartender, blah, blah, blah. And he says, oh, yeah, we had Nick Cave came in here for a drink after the show. I said, that's great. He said, tight ass, horrible tipper. I said, oh, okay. He said, not as bad as Susie Sue, though. So there you go.
Wow.
We got to wrap up the show. We've covered, so many materials, or so many things.
Right.
We have two polls going. And both of them are I'm very disappointed in you, our loyal listeners. I'll start with the second poll, which I can only presume is Deitch and his burner account. If you had to get rid of one of the following holidays, which one would it be? Now, of course, this isn't a fundamentally flawed question. Because two have said events are not holidays. But anyhow, 77% would do away with Valentine's Day.
Well
you should
done.
All be well, ashamed well of yourself. Done. You should all be ashamed Holster. Of yourself. 5% said Christmas.
Yeah, it's insane. You would never get rid of Christmas.
Oh, man, I'll get rid of it. It's just, it's the worst time of the year.
Ugh, not true.
It's just, anyhow. 15% said Halloween, which
makes no sense either. Why would you get rid of Halloween? Just pure fun and sugar.
3% said Thanksgiving. I mean,
you might have some issues politically. I can live with that.
I'm disappointed in that. What
should we have put on there? Like Arbor Day or something?
The Neil Young poll, which is just burning up the internet. We've got over, get a load of this. We've got over 4,000
really?
Replies.
Oh my God. No, we don't.
To the Neil Young poll. Would I lie? Today's Writer's Block poll, 4,000 votes in. Where is Neil Young from? 52% said that place in Ontario. 17% said Toronto. 31% were correct, like me, and said Winnipeg. There you go.
All right.
Like so there you go.
When do polls close?
Polls close whenever the results come in from the Northwest Territory.
Okay.
The outer reaches. That's it for us. Tim and Sid are next. We'll be back tomorrow, I think. Have a great night.